This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And it's the X-Trays. We all are fired.
Ho, ho, ho! Place of a Nation, welcome to episode number 14, PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. I'm your host, JT Rosero, here with you on this Wednesday evening, and Christmas just a mere few days away. So we're a holly, we are jolly, the cheer is in the air, the eggnog is flowing, the Christmas spirit is within us. So let me go ahead and bring in the man who should be saying ho, ho, ho. I'm going to ask him to do it when he comes in. The Godfather, Nate Milton.
No, I will not. The Christmas play is over, JR.
Come on!
I will not fall into your scripted promos. I'm waiting for the special Kwanzaa edition of Place to Be Nation.
You've been waiting a while, sir.
But yeah,
let me tell you, brother.
Ho, ho, Hogan. How about that?
There you go. Yes. The Godfather, yes. You'll hear him and many other luminaries this weekend on the PTBN Christmas Play special. Santa back again. Typecast. Steve Willey, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I jumped right in just like Will would.
Yeah.
Lapping. You're doing all right. I'm glad to be here, of course.
It's good for me to be back. I missed you guys last time, but Glenn Butler, as always, does a great job. He's kind of like the, Bob Ryan always fills in on PTI when one of the boys are out. It's like a usual,
Rachel,
isn't it?
Rachel Nichols.
Yeah, or Dan Le Batard, right? Isn't he always in there? So, yeah, you know, Glenn's like our fourth man of the
Torrey.
Yeah, he always slides in when one of us is ill or out. So I want to thank Glenn for being here. And it's good to be back with the guys, though, on the show. And we have a lot to cover. We're going to talk some WWE. We're going to first kick off talking a little bit about the women's title. Then we're going to cover Roadblock. We'll give a few thoughts on the end of the year. Our next episode will be more of a year in review, looking back in the totality of 2016. I want to talk a little talking smack, because I think there's some tie-ins, Nate, between your Santa Claus and the Santa Claus we saw on that show.
Jeez.
And then still after that, Kevin Kelly, the voice of Ring of Honor, our friend here at PTBN, another star for the Christmas show. He'll be here. He's going to talk some ROH. He'll talk some New Japan, maybe talk Wrestle Kingdom. So a lot to talk about there with Kevin. And then Aaron George returns, our TNA correspondent, to talk some Total Nonstop Deletion, which, of course, took place last week from the Hardy compound. And then, boys, maybe we'll wrap up with a few Christmas thoughts here or there. But why don't we circle back to WWE? Of course, this past weekend was Roadblock, end of the line. And some big matches took place. Some kind of big matches took place. Some matches took place. But one of them, one of the more hyped matches, and for the umpteenth time this year, Charlotte battled Sasha Banks with the Women's Championship on the line. This was a 30-minute Iron Man match between the two of them. Of course, their well-known, well-documented feud. Charlotte undefeated on pay-per-view this year. Sasha had beaten her, I think it's, what, three times now on Raw for the title? Or twice?
At least twice.
Right, at least twice. So she has owned her on TV. Charlotte's big wins all coming on pay-per-view, trying to complete the year undefeated on pay-per-view. And going into the match, it kind of seemed like this would be it. Sasha would get the win, maybe, end that streak, end the feud, and move on as champion. Wasn't quite meant to be, though, because Charlotte ended up winning in sudden death overtime, taking back her title in a great match, as always. A lot of focused work, a lot of great selling by Sasha, and their chemistry, of course, remains top-notch. But Charlotte remains undefeated for 2016, winning every single pay-per-view match that she was on, and leaves the year as women's champion. And it looks like to be entering into a feud with Bayley based on both the word out in the dirt sheets as well as what we saw on Raw. So, Nate, let me start with you. What do you think of this feud, and what do you think of the way it's progressed? Were you surprised Sasha lost, and what do you think of Charlotte's undefeated streak on pay-per-view?
This feud to me was the Dave Matthews Band every day. And I'll elaborate on this because I just don't want to leave that out there and have the listeners scratching their heads.
Hey, but before you elaborate, Sasha did win it three times on Raw.
Yep. Okay.
From Charlotte. So they've traded the title back and forth. This, here it is. It's the level set. So Charlotte won it on April 3rd at WrestleMania to determine the new champion. Sasha beat her July 25th from Pittsburgh. Charlotte won it back at SummerSlam. Sasha defeated her on Raw in LA October 3rd. Charlotte won it back at Hell in a Cell. Then Sasha won again in Charlotte November 28th on Raw. And then Charlotte won it back here. So
okay.
There we're at. So we've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 title changes between the two of them since April.
Yeah, so this was the Dave Matthews Band Everyday album for me, and you know, I was a big Dave Matthews fan back in the day, and I loved, you know, Crash. I loved Listener Supported. There was another one in there, Before These Crowded Streets. I thought those were really good albums, and I was a huge fan. And then they came along with Everyday, which was the first album without Steve Lillywhite. It was the album where they went to the electric guitars instead of the acoustics, and it was the same band but with a different sound. And the more I listened to that record, I liked it, but it was there was something missing. It just wasn't quite what those other albums were. And that's how I feel with this feud. Like, it's good, and the matches are objectively a step above what WWE women's matches have been in the past, but the feud just doesn't quite click and connect for me. And that's because I think the way they've told the story, it's been too herky-jerky, too start and stop. Like, the thing I keep harping back to is when Sasha wins, it's a cool moment, but it feels anticlimactic. Like, when she won her title the first time, it was on that first Monday Night Raw after the brand split instead of at SummerSlam, where they could have really capitalized. Then when she wins again, it's on the Raw preceding Hell in a Cell instead of at the pay-per-view in her hometown. And so I think, in order to serve this story of Charlotte being undefeated on pay-per-views, which, you know, we've talked about off air how inane I think that is, I think they've sacrificed some really cool story moments. And so while the feud has been good and both women are quite capable, I think there was a lot left on the table in terms of emotional resonance with the fans.
Steve, do you think the hot potatoing hurts the title? I'm actually of the mindset that it doesn't necessarily, because, like, I've seen some people pontificate out on Twitter, and I feel the same way. They've been lined up as being very, very even and very, very equal, to the point where either could steal a match at any time. So to me, when you have a feud like that, that's not hot potatoing and devaluing the title. To me, when I think of hot potatoing the title, it's like, you know, Goldust winning the IC title, losing it 2 weeks later to the Godfather, who loses it to Owen Hart. You know, like, to me, that's like that's the hot potatoing that sucks, or the tag titles jumping all around from different people. Like, this to me is a legitimate feud between two women who are at the top of their game and are dead even rivals, and either can win at any time. So from that perspective, regardless of Charlotte being undefeated on a pay-per-view or whatever, just the fact that the title is bouncing around, I think the way they've done it has actually kind of worked okay, and to me hasn't devalued the belt in any way.
Well, first of all, Twitter pontificating is tonight's oxymoron of the night.
Yeah, I guess. I like that. I saw that point, though, and I agreed with it. So that one person that made that point was pontificating. Well,
I think, well, here's the snarky comment is, you know, besides the last one I made, is, was there any value to the title to begin with? You know, it's a relatively new title in terms of Raw Women's Champion versus, you know, SmackDown's Women Champion. I know it has the quote unquote lineage to it, but this is kind of being established as the title with this new women's revolution. And it's both a positive towards Charlotte and Sasha as they're being presented as even, and also a negative highlighting the lack of depth of the division, where you have most of the women on SmackDown now. It's kind of, we talked, I believe, last episode about the lack of depth on SmackDown and the men. So you get stuck putting on all of these, you know, you have your 52 weekly Raws, you have, you know, a good 10 to 12 pay-per-views with Raw superstars on them. You get forced into having very similar matches. And so the story, I think, being told, besides the fact that these two are even, is, hey, we are making history. look at us. We are letting these women main event. We're letting them be in all of our different types of gimmick matches. And so I think they're more trying to build up the case as, hey, these women are equal to our men. Whether that continues remains to be seen. Whether that is bought by the public remains to be seen. But you can't argue with the fact that 2016, the fact that this feud exists is a huge difference from the last 30 years of women's wrestling in the WWE.
That's a good point, because I think that in search of history, they've overlooked history. And again, I hate to keep going back to it, but I think just doing something because it's the first time it's been done, yes, by definition, that makes it historic.
Exactly.
But does it make it memorable? Does it make it something that's indelible in somebody's mind? And I think had Sasha won at Hell in a Cell, that's an indelible moment. That's Shawn Michaels' boyhood dream at WrestleMania being realized. But because they didn't do that, I think, yes, it's a great footnote. It's a great piece of trivia, but it doesn't have that same resonance. And to the point that JR was making about not having a problem with the belt going back and forth, I don't either. I don't, you know, consider this, you know, hot potatoing in the truest extent, because they are being presented as even. They are the female equivalent of Charlotte's dad and Ricky Steamboat. But the difference between Flair and Steamboat and Flair and Banks is that we had more of a chase with Flair and Steamboat. I think those stories were plotted better. Whereas, yes, they were even. Yes, they were equal. But Ric Flair was so devious and sneaky that he found ways to get that one up on Ricky Steamboat. So for every win Ricky would get, Flair would get two. And I think that makes the story more interesting than these women just kind of going back and forth.
It also reminds me more of actually like Triple H and The Rock in 2000 when they both were trading the belt, and it pretty much went month by month where they would just flip it back and forth for a little bit there. It reminds me more of that. So it felt like a hot potato, but not quite. But they were, I mean, these were the two guys that had ascended in the wake of Austin being hurt, and they pretty much were presented as, you know, dead even on one on the heel, one on the face side. That it feels more like that to me.
Yeah, because we're looking at seven title changes, you said, in 5 months, because July 25th to
March was almost. I mean, depends if you count Charlotte winning in March. So it's really six from July.
Oh, sure.
The Mania counts as the seventh. So
you're looking about one a month, a little bit more frequent than that.
So do you guys think this feud is done? I mean, for a while, it seems like we're going to get Bayley-Charlotte. Do you think Bayley-Charlotte's the feud to Mania? Do you think Sasha is just on the back burner for now and that she'll come back and maybe be the one that ends the streak of Mania? Is Bayley just a holdover? Maybe she gets the Rumble shot, you know? Does she just fill the time until Mania and then Sasha's the one that gets that marquee win?
I think Charlotte and Sasha is done for now, but then again, this is the same WWE that promoted Owens and Zayn as this is the end, and we got that match two or three times after it was the end. So, you know, don't never say never. But in terms of Mania, I think we get Charlotte and Bayley for a while. We get Nia and Sasha for a while. Bayley beats Charlotte, and unfortunately, Sasha beats my boo. And we get heel Sasha versus babyface Bayley at Mania. That's my prediction.
Wow. So you think Charlotte not even in the title picture at Mania?
Nope. I think, you know, they could go the three-way route just to give her something to do if they don't have another hot program. But I think the best and most compelling story would probably be bitter Sasha coming back for her title against her former friend Bayley.
See, I can see that happening after. I feel like they want Charlotte's thing to end at Mania, where she's basically, you know, a year plus undefeated it on pay-per-view. So I think what we get is I could see Bayley ending Charlotte's run at Mania and then Sasha turns heel the next night and that starts the next feud. But it'd be interesting if they can stretch out Bayley Charlotte. I mean, they just fought already once last night, Monday night. Like if they can make it to Mania with that one.
Well, you got five more to go until Mania then. I think they're right on pace, right?
All right, yeah, there you go. Right. I mean, how many pay-per-views are there at Mania? Is it just Rumble and one Raw show? And is there two in February doing that?
There's Fastlane is in March. I'm not sure. I'm assuming there's a SmackDown. The Fastlane is the Raw pay-per-view. I'm assuming there's going to be a SmackDown pay-per-view in February.
Yeah, probably. Okay. So it'll be interesting where they head for that. But any so before we move on, any final thoughts when it comes to the women's championship?
I think they really have to press reset on Bayley and reestablish who she is. You know, what got her over in NXT, she was not very much over when she started. She was just like kind of, crushing on all the celebrities, like more like a super fan than anything. And it was once they had her in that underdog role where someone like Charlotte was bullying her and, you know, saying that she was not in her league and then having to prove herself, that's when she started getting over. And the people at Full Sail started getting behind her. They never really have done that since she's been called up. It was, hey, she's called up. This is Bayley. You know her from NXT, don't you? Don't you? And they need to establish that character. And it's something that they've really struggled with a lot of these NXT people. And she will get over if you tell that story.
So it looks like the SmackDown pay-per-view is Elimination Chamber as of now anyway. February 12th, 17th in Phoenix. And then Fastlane is that March show. So looks like we'll have at least two pay-per-views on the Raw side before Mania. Rumble and then Fastlane.
Whew.
All right, and we're on the Fastlane here tonight in Clotheslines and Headlines, episode 14. Why don't we go ahead and take a break, boys? Listen to some Christmas music, listen to a little bit of a break ski, and then we're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more WWE. We'll go through the rest of Roadblock, some thoughts on the end of 16. We'll talk some talking schmack, and then Kevin Kelly, Aaron George, Total Nonstop Deletion, still to come. Be back right after this break.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
All right, we are back here, episode number 14, PTBN Clotheslines and Headlines, continuing our chatter about the world of WWE, and like we mentioned this past Sunday was Roadblock, End of the Line, the final pay-per-view special event for the year. There was some good and some bad mixed in here. I don't think it's a show that's going to scream epic or anything when we go back to look throughout 2016. I don't think it was the worst show to end the year on. We had some interesting moments. We had some memorable moments mixed in as well. Nate, I'll start with you. Kind of anything jump out at you as a moment of the night that you look back and say, okay, that was worth me checking out?
I think it was a decent show. I think, and I've said it on Twitter, the combination of WWE event and Sunday night football game, I think this past week we might have had the best.
Right.
With the Cowboys game and with Roadblock. Because I enjoyed this show much more than the SmackDown show last month.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the moments that stood out to me were the tag match. I thought it was a really good match with the New Day and Sheamus and Cesaro. And then the women's match, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah. The Sheamus and Cesaro winning the tag titles was great. I was a little torn. Like, it seemed a little forced that New Day finally broke the record and then lose it, like, you know, a few days later. But if you weren't going to pull the trigger on Sheamus and Cesaro now, when were you? So everything kind of timed out well that you got to have New Day break the record, and then you get to cash in on this storyline because they've been really good. And this match was a great opener. 10-minute sprint. They beat the crap out of each other. Cesaro and Sheamus have really gelled as a team. They're still kind of playing the we don't like each other thing, but not really. Cesaro's kind of starting to embrace it more. Sheamus is still being selfish, and they work really well together. And Cesaro, for as much as everyone sees him as a big single star, which obviously we all know he could be, He is really fucking good as a tag worker. I mean, we saw how quickly and well he gelled with T.J. Wilson. What's his name? Tyson Kidd. And you know, and how well his team with Sheamus has been, and they're getting over. And I'm glad they gave him the belts, and they've been funny in their promos and interviews and everything else, and they've been really, really good in the ring. Two guys that are always great in the ring, but even together work even better as a unit. What do you think, Steve? Did you enjoy that match in that moment?
Oh yeah, that was my, I would say probably my favorite match in the card. It went longer than I expected. But it didn't lag. Like, I kept waiting for the finish to come, and it didn't come. And so it built my excitement. And I already knew who won it because I watched it later in the evening, and it still kept my attention. And that's a sign of a pretty good match if you already know what's going to happen and you're still invested in it.
Anything else jump out? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Cesaro is, you know, we talk about how versatile he is, and you know, he's been thrown in with people before he was in WWE who weren't very good at all, and he'd have to kind of carry him, and he'd be thrown in with guys as tag team who are really good, like, you know, Chris Hero or you know, Tyson Kidd, and he just, you know, he gets himself over. It might be slow, it might take a while, but you know, he's pretty impressive. Yeah, we talked about the women's match too. That was something that I actually really did enjoy, and there wasn't one thing that stood out to me is I was thinking that Seth Rollins and Jericho was going to be better than what it was. It wasn't that it was bad. It was, you know, like you said before, Nate, when you're talking about something being unmemorable, it was not very memorable. Like, I outside of the finish, which I thought was really well done, kind of blocking out of the code breaker and then putting that into a pedigree, I thought that was really creative and showed Rollins' strength. I was kind of zoned out and was doing other things as I was watching it.
That match to me was, and I know JR will appreciate this because he's a music aficionado. That was R. Kelly and Jay-Z, best of both worlds. Like, oh shit, we got Jay-Z and we got the Pied Piper on the same record, and outside of one or two songs, it was disappointing and underwhelming. And that's how I felt about Jericho and Rollins, two guys who you know could do so much better.
Mm-hmm. So who's peeing on who?
I think the audience took that shower.
The Jericho's 46, not 14.
Right.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
All right, let's go to this break for RF video. No. The what do you guys think of Seth
Rollins? Allegedly on that one, too.
Seth Rollins' face run so far. How's it leaving you, Nate? Is it getting you all on Twitter? Is it leaving you kind of blah? Like, what do you think? Is it the way it started? Is he just not connecting? What's your feelings on him?
To quote the great Charles Barkley, it's been terrible because you had a guy coming back off of that injury that was ready-made to be arguably the top face in the company with the way the audience was reacting to him. And we got that immediate heel turn when he came back. And so it's like, okay, well, I guess this is how we're going to go. Then we get the face turn, but it's not a face turn of his own volition. It's kind of a face turn of convenience because Triple H screwed him out of the title. And by the way, that to me, obviously I know the real reason is because Triple H is not going to be on every single Monday Night Raw, but just from a character standpoint, you would think that that would be his main motivating factor. Like, I'm going to get this guy that screwed me out of my chance at the title. Instead of, you know, playing pitter-pat here with Chris Jericho.
And they're going to do it, but the problem is it's going to be so far out. If they do it at Mania, Rollins or Triple H, the issue is kind of cooled. I mean, yeah. I'll give them this. They are good at reheating things quickly through video packages and through just basically restarting the feud and calling back to it. I mean, they are adept at it because they do it so often when it comes to Mania season when guys just pop back up out of nowhere. But yeah, they kind of took what could have been a hot issue and let it simmer for much too long. And it's very reminiscent of 2004 when Evolution kicked Randy Orton out to turn him face and just how that never connected because you didn't, you know, why am I going to get behind this pussy who only is a fan favorite because the other guys turned on him? You know, it wasn't, to me, that story only works when you have like a dim-witted guy, you know, like a Rick Steiner with the Varsity Club, something like that where they're, he's kind of with them because he's a little tapped in the head, you know, and then they kick him out and they're mean to him. Like, that's when that works. To me, when you're just a prick and other pricks turn on you, like, why should I love you all of a sudden? It doesn't really make sense. And I think that's a big piece, like you said, Nate, I think you nailed it, of why his face turns just not connecting.
And he's never had that moment, kind of going to your point, where he's kind of atoned for the crap that he did when he was a heel.
Right.
You know, where he's never kind of talked to the audience and, you know, made amends. You know, he's the same guy pretty much. It's just now he's fighting guys that we like less. And in the case of Kevin Owens, some fans like Owens more.
And it's almost like that it's assumed if Reigns kind of forgave him and they do the Shield spots like that, it seems like that's their way to say, okay, this is Rollins apologizing and Reigns has accepted it because they're doing Shield shit. Like that's, I almost feel like that was their way of, instead of having Rollins have to talk about it, like just kind of, okay, Reigns is accepting him, we should.
And that might've worked if the fans actually liked Roman Reigns.
Right. Exactly. But they don't.
Like the dude co-signing you, we like him less than we like you.
Right. We'd like you better if you still hated him.
When right.
The three of them together, then that was working.
Yeah.
But yeah, you need, it's lunacy that they can give, you know, a microphone and talk for 10 minutes about stuff and you can't say, hey, you know, I'm sorry. You know, we're back together again. I
they're
did
a little
this.
Pressed for time, Steve, you know?
Yeah.
They don't have a lot of air time.
They got like 3 hours and 15 minutes to fill. So,
So that kind of segues to our main event. Kevin Owens, Roman Reigns, DQ for the Universal Championship. Owens retains. Chris Jericho, I mean, pretty much saw it from far away where they had really teased that Jericho finally had it, that he was going to turn on Owens. He comes in, hits Owens. So you just assume, okay, here's the split. And then it was all a ruse just to get Owens to win and help him retain his title. So they're still together. Steve, do you see this thing lasting long? I mean, it seemed like we're getting Reigns and Owens again at the Rumble probably, but you know, where do you see things falling? Where do you see the chips falling with these guys going forward? And is Jericho and Owens just going to last forever?
Forever. they're gonna roll Jericho out when he's 55 and any friendship in wrestling is going to devolve eventually into some sort of match. It's rule is, you know, as old as time. So eventually it's going to break up. You would assume it would be a building to something at Mania, and then, you know, Jericho generally takes some time off. They did announce that Owens and Reigns will be at the Rumble. Why do they have, that's a question I have for you guys. Why do they have champion versus champion matches, you know, outside of WrestleMania 6 with Hogan Warrior? Like, they always end in a DQ, mm-hmm. pretty much. So at this point, yeah, like, yeah, you're trying to look back and see if it, like, it would just set up for a DQ ending. And so, you know, they do the quick, you know, throw Owens through a table, throw Jericho through a table to get the crowd back. But, you know, once again, you're leaving a show on a flat note.
So kind of along those lines, Nate, of the question we just asked about Rollins, what is Kevin Owens' reign? Like, how has that gone for you? Is it, it seems like something we all wanted for a while. Like, it seemed like it'd be a dream scenario. Like, wow, Kevin Owens is champion of Raw or WWE. Like, it seemed like something that may never happen, like a dream scenario. And now here we are. And it almost seems like it's not even anything anyone ever talks about. like, is it, right. You know, how is it connecting for you with him as champion? Is it what you thought it would be? Is it disappointing to you? Is he exceeding?
I think in a vacuum, Owens works, particularly the pairing with Jericho, because oftentimes they are one of the highlights on Raw week to week. But when you look at it as this guy is the top guy on what you've continually told me is the top show and the top brand in your company, it doesn't really work because he's not over to the point he should be. His challengers aren't over to the point they should be for various reasons. And so everything feels very lackluster in your main event scene. You know, it's telling. It's very telling when a guy like Goldberg can come in and instantly become the hottest thing on that Raw brand. And obviously Goldberg would have gotten a good reaction just for the nostalgia pop. But the fact that it had the sustainability that it did is an indictment, I think, on the guys that are there. Because, and it's not their fault, but for whatever reason, the storylines that Owens and Rollins and Reigns to a certain extent have been put in have diminished what I think could be key players if you put them in the right position.
And the question remains for me is what would have happened if Finn did not get injured? Yeah. You know, what was going to be the story going forward? Because we are only about, you know, 3.5 months removed from that. So what would have happened is, was this the best scenario that they could come up with, you know, to revise it? Because, you know, Vince has his hand on all the big main event stories. So you had to switch that up within a week or two and move forward and reconfigure your plans for, you know, Rumble and Mania. Is how much does that play into this feeling a little bit tepid? And then how much, as we referred to before, with Triple H helping him win and then going off TV and not really explaining too much what happens, how much did that hurt the Owens reign? No pun intended there.
Do you think Owens makes it to Mania as champ?
I don't.
You think it's Reigns?
I think it is either going to be Reigns or whoever wins the Rumble.
I'll say.
I think they could do some funny business here with, you know, typically the match would be at WrestleMania. I think they could do some funny business where the Rumble winner gets a title shot early.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, depending on how Balor is doing, could it be Owens Balor at Mania? Could that be the match, stuck into my buddy, and we are going to Fastlane, and he texted me the other day. He's like, "Hey, do you think we could see Balor? Because that's about 6 months after the injury, and that was the timeline was around 6 months that he was going to be out. So, you know, could that be something that they're going to be looking to do, and then Jericho can be, you know, the second choice if Balor doesn't heal in time."
I mean, I really thought we would get Owens Jericho at the Rumble, and then Owens would lose before Mania. But I'm starting to think Owens will lose before Mania, and we just get Owens Jericho in a singles match at Mania. I just don't see Owens Jericho for the world title. I mean, unless they really have like 3 or 4 matches that they see clearly above that, maybe then we get that. If it's a Cena Taker, you know, or whatever, AJ, Cena, you know, whatever, some mix of those guys, Goldberg, Brock, and Triple H, Rollins, and then all of a sudden you're looking at Owens as being like, all right, well, it's kind of the fifth match either way, whoever is champion. And you kind of look at where does that leave a guy like Reigns. So I mean, this is stuff we'll talk about over the coming weeks, but I think for the first time in a few years, Mania is really kind of jumbled. You know, I know last year they had some of the injuries, but some of it was still kind of clear-headed where we were headed. This seems very way open-ended. There's like all different puzzle combinations that they could go with, and a lot of it hinges on who does Undertaker fight and who does John Cena fight. I mean, then the pieces kind of fall into place from there.
And it still wouldn't surprise me, even though I think it might be a bit of a long shot, but they did plant the seeds. It would not surprise me if Goldberg ends up with the title here. I don't know if at Mania or before Mania, but it wouldn't surprise me if that comes to pass.
That's still the way I think I would go, is Reigns beating Goldberg at Mania. I mean, I don't know if it's going to happen, but that's what I would do. All right, any final thoughts on Roadblock, Steve? Any other moments or matches stick out in a good or bad way for you?
No, just that I'm looking forward to the Crash Cage making its reappearance at the Royal Rumble. They got to get their monies out of that.
That's right, right? What do you think, Nate?
Oh, I mean, I'm a sucker for the big cages, but I think maybe the thing that disappointed me the most at Roadblock was the Cruiserweight match. Mm. I think it went like 6 or 7 minutes.
And 6 minutes, yep.
Yeah, like 6 minutes. And that's great if you're Slick Rick and Dougie Fresh and you got 6 minutes till you're on. But for the Cruiserweights who get such short shrift on Raw, you would think on the pay-per-views and the special events, you have the freedom to give them more time to do what they do best. And I think that just limiting these guys to 6 minutes, it was, if I can steal a WWE turn of phrase, it was pretty outlandish.
And they should really just be opening the show with them and let them go. I mean, they're still stuck on this, sticking them in the middle of the show. I mean, the one positive we got was the heel turn of Neville, which was really well done, and he was really good. on Raw, and word is, I haven't seen 205 Live yet, but word is he was excellent there as well. So maybe this is the one thing that'll breathe some life. Maybe a Neville-Rich Swann feud for the title. We'll get things going a bit.
And it's telling when, you know, as I said before, the cruiserweights are, you know, my favorite type of wrestling. And on my little page of notes that I took, I didn't have one note on that match at all. So when you brought that up, it's like, oh, yeah, that happened. That whole match happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think this time, I think people proclaiming, like, the cruiserweights are dead, it's never going to happen, or a little ahead of the game. Like, I mean, all it takes is one hot feud or match, and things can be lit. So, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think the potential's there when you look at the breadth of talent they have. I think it's much too soon to completely bury the division as a concept. But
yeah,
the way they're going, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they're dead, but I do think that there's always going to be a ceiling for them. I think I really love Neville being placed in the division now, and I think whenever Aries is ready to go, he'll be somebody that really adds some spice to that division. But given their track record and given what we've seen so far, I think they will still have kind of this pigeonholed role, which will limit how far they can grow. You know, it's like having a baby turtle and you put him in a little tiny fishbowl. And you know, no matter how big he can grow, he's going to be limited by the constraints of the box or the bowl that you put him in.
I thought we were going to go with Slater's pet. Was it Chameleon already? Yeah.
And hence my new business, Steve's Psychological Society for Baby Turtles.
Oh, Artie boy. all right. Looking back at the year that is in WWE, we're going to do this a little bit more in depth in 2 weeks' time with our full year in review takes. But we wanted to just throw lob a couple of categories in a lightning round style out there. For the world of WWE again, this is not we'll kind of leave the other promotions till in a couple weeks, and we'll dive more into WWE at that time too. But just off the top of your head, really quick, we don't have to dive deep. Just with a few minutes here, Nate, who are your favorite 1, 2, 3 male female wrestlers in WWE this year?
James Ellsworth, James Ellsworth, and James Ellsworth.
That's very interesting.
My top three guys would probably be Styles. Cena, and you know what? I'll go with the New Day as an act. And in terms of women, Charlotte, Sasha, and Nia Jax, but I'm biased.
You and Nia. I mean, AJ's number one on my list by far. I mean, Chris Jericho's on my list too. No, you know, definitely no problem there.
As long as you're not on his list.
I mean, he's a guy that this is his first full year in forever. A guy that was maligned at times early in the year, brought a lot of hate and angst when he beat AJ Styles at WrestleMania, but then really turned it on from there. You know, once he started doing the heelish gimmicks and act and started doing the list and teaming with Owens and having, you know, kind of dialing it back in the ring and turning the clock back and having some great matches. So I think he's a guy that carried a lot of the TV throughout the doldrums of the summer. So he'd be on my list. You know, Cena's obviously on the list. I think Reigns, you know, had his moments, especially in the feud with AJ early in the year, was really, really good. A guy that was hamstrung by some really questionable booking earlier in the year. I think AJ is. I mean, AJ to me is hands down the rest of the year when it comes to WWE this year. I don't think it's even close.
No, I mean, he basically carried both brands, really. Right. He is number one by far on SmackDown. No one's even in his league that's there full time. I would go Roman with my two. If I could bring NXT into it, you have to, you know, say Nakamura just because of the impact he made so quickly.
Oh, Miz, too. Miz has been fantastic. Oh, mainly since SmackDown rebooted and gave him the focus, I think he's been excellent, whether it's on Talking Smack or just his heel gimmick on SmackDown itself. A complete revelation.
You're going to have to give me another 2 or 3 months to say I'm turning the corner on Miz, but I think that the hate and dislike I've had for him since the Real World days, it's going to take him a lot to do that. Like, if you struggle with your life for 3 years, it's going to take you 3 years to turn it around. And you know, we've been struggling with the Miz for well over a decade. So it's give me a year.
Yeah, he's been great. Another thing I like that surprised me that I liked is Randy Orton and the Wyatts. Somehow has become one of my favorite acts in WWE right now. I love that Orton is completely 100% bought in. I love the Sister Abigail into the RKO. It didn't make much sense, and it seemed like it was all a setup for just him to quickly turn and screw him over, but it's really worked, and I think it's helped elevate Bray greatly. Like,
yes,
he's been main eventing SmackDowns, he's believable, he's doing appearances, and I really don't want this just to be Orton turns on him and they have a Mania match. Like, I think they should just team for a while, and then eventually you do the split or the turn, but I think it's working so well, and it's made Orton interesting for the first time in a while, too. Like, I really like this pairing. I hope they let it go for a while.
I think whenever we get that moment, whether it's 3 months from now or a year from now, whenever we get that moment where Randy finally RKOs Bray, the way they've built it up so far, I think they've established it enough that it'll get the desired reaction, and the fans will just be over that like gangbusters.
And it's elevated Luke Harper as well.
Yeah.
You know, brought him, and they're basically, you know, New Day redo, you know, heel version with the three of them together. And they're getting, I think the big picture that they were showing to preview SmackDown had Bray with the titles and Randy Orton and Luke Harper in about the same size, right next to him, as opposed to Bray being in front and, you know, like Harper and, you know, wherever Eric Rowan is.
I was going to say, all the Wyatts are over except for Rowan, because even Strowman's gotten over.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, we wanted to maybe talk about Mel Most Improved, too. I think at least over the back 3 months of the year, I think he's in the conversation for Most Improved. He's getting over, and it's someone that they really were, you know, we heard rumors like in WrestleMania time that Strowman would be the contender for Cena for SummerSlam, right? That was the big thing. And you know what? They didn't rush him. And they took their turn. They took their time. They worked him up the card. They did squash after squash after squash. They kind of did the Sami Zayn thing. And now he's really gotten over as a good Haas. Throwing the guys through the freaking Christmas trees and everything else on Raw was great. And he's really worked his way up. I'm not saying he's a world title contender, but he's worked his way up into a solid performer on the show that, you know, is a valued part of Raw.
I'm intrigued to when we will see him versus Brock. I would be intrigued to see that matchup. You'd think it's going to happen at some point if Brock's going to stick around.
I would think so. But how do you – I mean, you're not going to put Strowman over him. Yeah, depends if they want to kill Strowman in any way. But
That's why I'm intrigued to see it happen. That's how they're going to book that.
Who do you think, Nate, from Most Improved this year? Anyone?
Ooh, Most Improved. Strowman's got to be up there in that category. Someone who has been improving, at least on Talking Smack, is Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy that I found very little value in, but his Talking Smack performances have been really good. And his work on SmackDown this past week wasn't half bad either. So I think if he can keep going in that direction and they can put him in there with the right opponents, you might be able to you know, have something here with this guy, especially on a SmackDown roster that is still very limited, that still reminds me of that Jay-Z line from The Takeover. You know, we don't believe you. You need more people. So I think now's a good time for him because I don't see a whole lot of call-ups to SmackDown until maybe after the Rumble or around Mania. So if he can, you know, start to gain some traction this next month or so, you know, he might be in a prime position, at least on SmackDown.
And I think that lack of depth on SmackDown is what's making the show so good because they have to fill time with these guys. And they've booked things at a much slower pace. They've let everything develop. They've given guys time to get over. And we talked about it. The way they present their wrestlers, and both female and male, they let them go out there and talk in a very realistic way. It doesn't feel as forced. It feels like everyone's kind of speaking from their gut. And whether it's Talking Smack or on SmackDown proper, everything just feels presented more. Like, you know, Natty seems really pissed about her position as a female wrestler and how she's been passed over. Baron Corbin really seems to hate the flippy floppy indie shit, and he just wants to be a fucking hoss that kills people. AJ Styles really seems like an arrogant prick that thinks he runs SmackDown. James Ellsworth definitely seems like a guy that never thought he'd be here, and he's doing whatever he can to hang on. Like, everyone really comes across in this role of this is who they are. And I think it's even normalized Wyatt, you know? Like, they do things in such a good way. And what helps is the way they present it with who's presenting it. Like, Renee Young is really good at that stuff on Talking Smack, at leading them into being themselves and setting up what they need to talk about. And Mauro Ranallo is really good at it on commentary. You know, he's really strong at telling the story, but also accentuating the positives and putting over what these characters are about. Like, the ancillary pieces around it. I think Daniel Bryan's good at it, too.
Yeah, like, Daniel Bryan's been really good.
And Shane's hasn't been on a ton, but when he is there, he does the same thing. It's a very positive show, and it's a very realistic show. Everyone seems to speak from just a realistic point of view. And even, I mean, right down to Carmella, who was much maligned for a while. You know, it took a while, but week after week, they keep sending her out there and they hammer the story home and she's getting the point across. And now here we are. And her feud with Nikki, you know, felt pretty real. And now it's splintering into Natty. And you got Becky Lynch still there. It's like everything's intertwined but separate. It's a nice, tight show. And Talking Smack has been a huge part of it.
I just need for them to come to some type of decision on who the hell Apollo Crews is. Because he had another great match with Miz this past week on SmackDown. But we still don't know anything about this guy. Like, I don't care if you give him a MVP type character, or I don't care if you pattern him after Cam Newton and have him come out in these outlandish Craig Sagerish looking outfits. But give him something, because the smiling guy who's a great athlete can only take you but so far.
Nate, you can only have one outlandish guy on a show.
Oh, poor Apollo, because that match was really good. Like, I actually bought it for a second that he might beat The Miz. The match was that good. And credit goes, again, to what JR was saying about The Miz. I think this character and the addition of Maurice has really reinvigorated him. But in terms of Apollo, man, it's like, yeah, I need you guys to do some work on him and you know, find some way that is non-stereotypical, non-offensive to portray this guy, because he's got to be more than, like, right now there's not much that separates him from Titus O'Neil or that separates him from really any of the cruiserweights not named Neville, because he's a guy that can go out there and get it done in the ring. But other than that, like, why should we be invested in his success or failure?
And I thought Miz really set the tone for this whole style of SmackDown with that. I think it was like one of the first Talking Smacks, right, when he cut the promo on Daniel Bryan. Like, that kind of set the tone for what this show was going to be, and everyone's followed suit. And Dolph Ziggler's another guy that has benefited greatly from all of this. You know, he feels like a main event player, even though he hasn't quite cashed in yet. You know, he's hanging around in that picture, and he's had good matches with Miz and with Ambrose and everything else. He's in the mix. You know, SmackDown has shown WWE is capable of booking a quality episodic television show. And it amazes me that them and Raw are run by the same company when you look at it. Any final thoughts on SmackDown you're on, Steve, before we just hit talk to Smack from last night quickly?
Well, you know, I mentioned before about the development or lack thereof of Bayley from, you know, NXT on. Baron Corbin is one that they did continue with the same character, the same story. As he was leaving NXT, that was his gimmick, was that he was crushing all the indie guys. And, you know, he comes up and he's doing the same to, you know, Kalisto. And so they continued that same character. Besides that, like with SmackDown, I think that the Talking Smack feeds the SmackDown and then vice versa. Mm-hmm. And what they might need to do goes back to the NXT crowd, thinking that the NXT crowd or everyone who's watching Raw watches NXT. They're going to have to somehow incorporate what happens on Talking Smack into the actual SmackDown television show, so that people know that this is a thing that they need to watch, instead of just doing like a little graphic for, hey, stay tuned for Talking Smack. You know, show what's happening on there and do it regularly, so you can get that audience, both who are in the arena and at home watching, you know, to watch the show and to get further involved in the storylines. And that turns into bigger pops at the crowd.
All right, and speaking of Talking Smack, so
I've been waiting for this. I thought that's where you're going to go with me when you asked me that. Threw me off.
I'm going to ask you right now to continue with it. So it was a Christmas edition, I guess. Daniel Bryan's out there in a cardigan, and out comes Santa Claus, who spends the entire episode basically exposing his chest, rubbing cookies all over it, sniffing Renee Young's hair, leering, groaning, grunting. A very erotic Santa Claus. May the Santa from Santa Baby, perhaps. I don't know where the inspiration was. But the whole show as a whole was really good. I mean, Becky Lynch cut a really good promo. She had some funny puns with Santa. I thought Natty was really good, even though she kept saying I'm royalty like 100 times. If you take that out, it was real good.
I'm a heart.
I'm a heart. I'm royalty. But you know, it felt real. Like, I'm fine if she repeats shit because it felt real. And then Baron Corbin was really good too, as was Daniel and Renee. They played up Renee smacking Miz on SmackDown. They talked that up. So that was a very effective half hour. But what was up with Santa, who played by Rhino, of course, into the crackers and cheese? I mean, is he going to get fired after that? what is going on, Steve, when you watch this? What were you thinking?
It was great because I think it was you who mentioned there's a pervy Santa on TS, and I'm like, I don't even know what that statement meant. Like, what is TS? What is pervy Santa? And then when you smartened me up to, oh, talking smack. So I didn't know what to expect. So as I was talking with you earlier, like, I literally locked myself in my office and threw some headphones on my laptop to watch during lunch. And it was something. I think that he took it right up to the edge. I don't think he crossed any lines. And it seemed like Renee was playing along with it and kind of laughing, but, you know, it wasn't too over the top, but it was definitely comical.
It was unique for sure.
For the first minute or so, I wasn't quite sure who it was.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I was just looking at the eyes and like, that can't be Cena, because it didn't, you know, the eyes looked like him, but they were, you know, kind of, you know, it just looked a little older than Cena. And then you figure it out, you know, oh, this is Rhino, and he brings the cheese, the cookies on the oiled up chest. And if you've ever been up close to Rhino, he is a big time baby oil guy. He can't imagine that Renee could have been that comfortable with it.
I mean, what an absurd night. In a good way. Absurd night. Nate, I know you didn't watch it, but any thoughts, just final thoughts on Talking Smack in general as a show this year?
I think it's a really good addition to SmackDown. And I think part of what makes it special is obviously the element where we're tiptoeing up to the line of reality. And I think Daniel Bryan toes that line excellently, where, you know, he'll throw in these little jabs or he'll throw in these little shots that you can tell are what he feels, but they work if you look at it through the context of his character on SmackDown. You know, it's like a better version of the reaction show TNA used to do, which I thought was a good concept. But the other thing I like about Talking Smack is after SmackDown, you still have a little bit of an appetite because it's only 2 hours. And so that additional 30 minutes doesn't feel like a chore.
Right.
Whereas if they try to do this after Raw, which is, you know, 3 hours and 15 minutes, because we got to give Todd Chrisley that stellar lead in, I'm done. Like, I don't need any more wrestling after Raw. So I think it's a great idea. It's a great concept. Kudos to whoever thought that up. And kudos to the performers for taking the ball and running with it. I think, you know, probably the genesis of it was that draft special.
Yes.
Where we had kind of the.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, we had kind of the best and worst of these guys and girls kind of left to their own devices. You know, we had some great promos, and then we had your man Kalisto, who's going to do a super lucha thing. But I really like Talking Smack, and you know, it goes to what we are always talking about. You know, if you can make me believe that you believe what you're saying, regardless of how outlandish it could be, there's that word again, I think that makes your character just that much better.
I was even surprised, like, Renee outright said, I'm in a relationship with Dean Ambrose, like, on that show, which
yeah.
I know has been referenced, obviously, on Total Divas and all that stuff, but it was weird hearing it there, you know what I mean, just out in the open.
It was finally referenced on SmackDown this week.
Right, so it seems like they may draw her into that feud, I'm guessing, so. All right, they will put a bow on WWE Talk for now. Hopefully everyone enjoyed that. So when we come back, we'll have our very own erotic Santa Claus with us, Kevin Kelly. He'll be talking some Ring of Honor. And some,
he's oiling up in the locker room right now.
He's getting the cookies rubbed on his
tits. ETBN green room.
Talking a little Ring of Honor, talking some New Japan. Later tonight, Aaron George with us to talk Total Nonstop Deletion. We'll be right back after this break. Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySimulation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the PlaySimulation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines. our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. All right, we are back here, episode number 14 of Police Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines. Already talked a little WWE, but now we're going to turn our eyes to a couple of other promotions, one being Ring of Honor, the other being New Japan Pro Wrestling. Of course, with me as always, Steve Willey, Nate Milton, and we're going to go ahead and bring in the voice of Ring of Honor, and of course, the voice of the 6th Annual Police Nation Christmas Podcast Spectacular, dropping on Christmas Eve, and that is Mr. Kevin Kelly. Kevin, how are you?
I'm good, and I do trust Nate and Steve that both of you will judge me very kindly by my work on this Christmas special, that there was significant blackmail and coercion involved, and I had to do it, so I apologize. I did it for the money, as they say.
You did
that's the only reason we do it, so it's coercion and blackmail.
The raw file of that thing was a masterpiece, Kevin. It was like an hour of everything.
So. 1 hour and 11 minutes we were on, and it was just me asking a lot of questions like, this is a rib, isn't it? No, this is a rib. Because this cannot be real.
A lot of impersonations as well. So if you ever wanted to hear Kevin do like a Bret Hart impersonation or a Jim Ross or a Hulk Hogan, this is the show for you because
that's out. That's what the kids have been screaming for.
All out.
I hope that Hogan impersonation wasn't too accurate, Brother Kelly.
Well, yeah, that would be. All right, can I tell you an idea? I can share this with you now because it's in the past.
Okay.
This was a year ago, leading up to Final Battle, where AJ Styles was going to wrestle Jay Lethal for the Ring of Honor World Title, and there was some question because AJ's back was bad. I don't know if you guys remember that or not. And it wound up to not be a story. It wound up to not be an issue. But listen to this. So we were in the car and we came up with the idea. Well, what happens if AJ can't go? What do we do? It's Final Battle. Geez, main event. Oh, and we start going through all these different, you know, fantasy scenarios. And we're in Florida, pouring rain. And we basically almost stop in the middle of the highway because the light collectively comes on for all of us at the same time. So I'll paint the picture. We would be in the 2300 arena in South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Jay Lethal would be in the ring and would say, AJ Styles, your back is hurt. You can't wrestle. I'm the greatest first generation star in the world today. There isn't anybody, and I don't mean anybody, that can beat Jay Lethal. The lights go out. The lights come on probably 10 or 12 minutes later. And Hulk Hogan would be standing in the ring.
Oh, my God.
Now, the best part was talking to Jay Lethal about that, which I cannot share. But reaction was priceless.
Now, would he have worked the match?
Every once in a while, we bring it back up just to tickle him.
Would he have worked the match as Black Machismo or as Jay Lethal?
you know what? I don't know what he would have done, because all I can say is thank God AJ's back was fine, because it wound up to not be an issue at all. And it wound up being a great match. But, man, it was comical. And I mean, the conversation began, like, we started like internally, like, yeah, but it's Final Battle and who else could we use? Oh my gosh. Well, what if it was this guy? And what if it was that guy? Oh, wow. Wow. And then it was, wait a minute. And then the whole scenario. It was great.
Would have been a hell of a match. Could have been real retribution for Jay Lethal on Hulk Hogan.
It would have been funny. And, you know, at that span of time where Hogan was in his career, he was deep in the middle of, you know, a public relations nightmare. Who knows if it would have helped? I don't know. You know, does time heal these kinds of wounds? I don't know. I guess who knows if we're going to find out this year. JR, if we were doing the Kevin Kelly show, we'd probably be asking if Hogan would be on WrestleMania this year.
I said he'd be back at some day. I thought maybe last year's WrestleMania. I'm guaranteeing this year he's at this year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
In Orlando. And I'm definitely going to word in the write-up here enough to tease a Hogan-Jay Lethal match so that like WrestleNewsRingWars.com reports it as a story. Hulk Hogan and Jay Lethal coming. All right, so speaking of rumors and news... Nigel McGuinness, Kevin Kelly, if we can talk about him for a moment, of course, the matchmaker for Ring of Honor, sometimes color commentator, been there for a long time. Word came out about a week ago that he was going to be headed finally to WWE, and his first role would be as kind of ambassador or figurehead of the UK-only tournament that's going to be happening on the network next year. Any kind of insight or thoughts you can share on Nigel leaving the company, just maybe your thoughts on him personally or just where you see things headed with him going?
No, I think it's, good for Nigel. I'm happy for him. It's, it's a good opportunity, and the time was right. So, being relieved of matchmaker duties and figuring out what might be next, this was, and I don't think it's easy. I don't think it's an easy decision for him or for anyone to make, to be in a, you know, in the company that basically you are known for, and to take a heck of a risk and to go, you know, a place that, it may not work out for you. And at 30, I don't even know how old Nigel is, mid-30s, to do that, you know, that's a heck of a risk, but good for him. And I'm proud of him. I'm happy for him. He's a friend, and I hope he has all the success in the world. I think he'll do well. The timing was just right.
How much notification did you have? Did you find out like as soon as pretty much everyone else did? Because it was pretty close to, you know, Final Battle and the television tapings.
It was, the week after all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was it. Wasn't much notice at all, but, you know, it's not necessarily a corporate world, you know, professional wrestling. So 2 weeks notice and exit interviews and that type of thing aren't, you know, the rule of the day.
That's funny. You made me go through one for the podcast, and it was very rigorous. What do you think of these ideas that WWE is rolling out with? Just kind of as an aside, the UK only tournament coming off the success of the Cruiserweight Classic, the rumored Women's Championship tournament next year. Like, this is stuff we haven't really talked about, Kevin, since we haven't been doing the show. But just any kind of thoughts as a fan of the direction they're headed with the network when it comes to that stuff?
Well, I think they know now. They've got enough data measurement to see that, you know, live events work, specials work, and there could be all kinds of, spin-off shows and other permanent programs, or they might just be short-run series. I think it all depends. But they're branching out in different genres of wrestling, be they weight class or gender. So good for them. And trying things like this, I'm sure they're doing everything on being careful cost-wise. They're not, you know, it's not an XFL type investment. So they're doing things smartly. I did read a quote though today on Twitter, which it's like a splinter in my finger, and I can't get rid of it. Triple H mentioned Will Ospreay in a tweet, and or in a quote that was tweeted, And it was a complimentary tweet about Will Ospreay, no problem there at all. But he said, I would love to have the chance to work with him. And, you know, with him in our system utilizing our process, we know he'll be successful. Wait, what? So only – the way I read it, it was like the only way you could be successful is if you do it their way. I think the Young Bucks are showing that that's not the case.
Oh, absolutely.
and no, not everyone is the Young Bucks. But there is no one set way of doing it. There's not a Ring of Honor way. There's not a New Japan Pro Wrestling way. There's and for WWE to have the hubris to think that they have a way, they don't have a way. They don't exactly have a track record of developing homegrown stars. And until they do, I don't really think they can claim that they have a process that works.
Now, Kevin, you talked about the wrestling business being vastly different from corporate America, and one factory in this business that never closes is the rumor mill. And there's always, you know, comings and goings and scuttlebutt here, speculation there. In terms of the Ring of Honor front office, like how much stock or how much thought do you put into, you know, word of somebody possibly leaving or word of even somebody possibly joining the company? How much thought do you guys put into that?
It's a good question. And phrased accurately, the, there's both thought and stock put into these conversations on a daily basis. And we as a company, Ring of Honor as a company, kind of had a lot of contracts, I guess, sort of come up all at once. So going forward, the hope is to try to sign folks to, you know, deals that end 6 months from now so that half the roster will leave in June. The other half will leave in January. There wouldn't be anybody left. Again, the rumor mill being what it is, yes, everyone is leaving. No one is staying. In fact, people that we haven't signed are going to be leaving. So we're looking forward to that. I guarantee you there will be departures. Nigel McGuinness not being the only one. I guarantee you there will. Just because it's a numbers game. And, you know, there will be athletes that are given more attractive offers in their mind from other companies. It's just the way the world works. It's free enterprise. It's the capitalist system, however you want to phrase it. I think it's fantastic. If guys can go out on the open market and make more money, then hallelujah. Their services are wanted. Better to be the opposite. It's something that we do talk about on a daily basis. And we're in constant communication with the guys whose deals are due, and we have plans in place with most of them, and those that we don't, we'll be, you know, quickly addressing those here before the end of the year.
And you know, one team, like you said, that has signed already, showing that Ring of Honor is an attractive place to work, are the Young Bucks, and you know, perhaps coming, you know, the anchors of the roster, at least from the tag team perspective.
Very good point, Steve. It's the, it's a great showcase for their skills, for what they want to do. Our partnership with New Japan allows them to have a as full time as they want schedule, and to make good money, and still have a home life. That opportunity is there for everybody that competes in Ring of Honor. Whether or not they're able to maximize that kind of is up to them. There is a real entrepreneurial spirit that lives within the Young Bucks. They're very smart. They have their finger on the pulse on exactly what works in 2016 into 2017. And the wrestling business, like all businesses, are changing and fluctuating at a, you know, very rapid pace. They have their finger on it. They know what works. Other guys are trying to figure it out. And so, yeah, I think just follow the pattern. Do what they've done. Be like them. Don't be them. Be your own person, but find out what they've done. Ask them. Guarantee you they'll tell you if you have their respect and you know them. It's wonderful. There'll be other guys that and Marty Scurll and Will Ospreay, who I just think are just two phenomenally talented difference makers on the roster, top end roster guys that came in, hit the ground running, and are phenomenal. They're fantastic. Great people, just tremendously gifted, and going to be a good story to see, you know, over time.
Well, and you know, speaking of the entrepreneurial spirit of the Young Bucks, you know, someone else that kind of comes to mind with that, for, at least for 2016, have been the Hardys, and that was the big shock of Final Battle. You know, the title match got, you know, all the thought going into that of the 5 years that it took for this to end, and but to have the Hardys pop up on the screen, I mean, do you have? It sounded like Young Bucks had some role in putting that together. Like, how did that all come about? Because that was a huge shock for the crowd and the viewing audience. And
I think
kudos to you guys for not letting it out.
Yeah, I think that the more we keep our secrets on this one, the better it will be for everybody. But sure. The story just began in Final Battle, that it's far from over. So it's going to be – I am going to be fascinated to see – the twists and turns of this one and everyone's reaction. The reaction inside Hammerstein Ballroom was one of the most remarkable things I have ever heard. Part of what made it so special was the fact that it was kept a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
People genuinely were surprised. They were shocked. And to have that in a live pay-per-view setting in an information age like we are today it was a great treat for everybody, and the story has just begun.
And I do think that's something that's missing in wrestling today. You know, that was part of what was so much fun about the Attitude Era days, was that you didn't know what was going to happen, who was going to show up on what program, and to be able to do that, like I said, kudos to you guys. That was something, and I'm really looking forward to, like, the creativity between the Bucks and the Hardys could lead to something fabulous.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Matt Hardy is a visionary and a leader in his own right, and is capable of doing some great things. So we're looking forward to seeing where all this can go.
I absolutely love that. You know, much like Steve was saying, it was a surprise to me, and I'm a jaded wrestling fan, so if you could surprise somebody like me, I know that the people actually inside the building had to feel that moment. And I think that's one of the cool things about a company like ROH, where you have the freedom and the flexibility to do some different things that maybe somebody like the WWE wouldn't even be willing to attempt. From your standpoint, Kevin, what do you think are some of the big advantages or some of the factors that make Ring of Honor a great place to work?
Well, I think that we have a very digestible schedule that gives anybody we have athletes on our roster, on our main roster, who compete in the upper mid card regions of, and they attend school full time. And we work around their school. We want them to get better. We want them to complete their degrees. We want them to have that fallback when the wrestling career is over. We're very proud of that. And I think that, the money is finding its, the market is bringing, Ring of Honor's having to step up to pay and retain, the athletes that they want to keep. It's always cheaper for any company to keep who they already have in place than to go out on the open market and hire new. It costs a lot more. So, the money situation starting to rise and improve, and guys are being able to be a little bit more comfortable. And we're just very happy with, kind of this partnership with New Japan and with CMLL, and where this is going to go. And we're working on some other things too, like another company to kind of be a part of that as well, to give us, I think a real global kind of reach and a global feel. So we're looking, we're looking to get things settled in that regard this year. And then probably I would say by 2018, it'll be like, out and running and doing well. So, those types of advantages, if you want to do something, like I just reached out to somebody today and I said, hey, I feel like we need a video. What do you think? You got any ideas? And they were like, yeah, I do actually. Okay, get it done. Go do it. You need any help, let us know. Make it your own. Here's kind of some thoughts. That's pretty much it. And allow them to be in the driver's seat. There's some people that can embrace that. And then there's others that go, wait, you're not going to tell me what to do? Nope.
Oh, that's a great way to grow as, you know, in any business as a wrestler, you know, in there, or, you know, to lead, but let people be themselves and be creative and be invested in what they're doing.
At the end of the day, it's not about our process, you know, to get back to that quote from Triple H, it's about their process. It's about the talent and everybody, you know, they're artists. We give them the paints, we give them the easel, we give them the canvas, we give them the situation, and we say, go paint. Sometimes you paint off the easel, as, you know, famous man has been quoted as saying. So the more different perspectives that we have on this vision of professional wrestling and television program in 2016, almost 2017, I think that lends itself to a great thing. And we have a real, you know, kind of open floor plan when it comes to ideas, submission, and where people want to go. And the more that, you know, we embrace that and the more that we harness it. Because it's one thing to say, oh, just submit your ideas. And then it just becomes, you know, the old suggestion box that nobody ever pays attention to in a corporate setting. Okay, so everything that's submitted has to be vetted and planned and scheduled and reworked with the talent to say, this will work, this won't, here's why, do you have a, you know, anything else, here's my ideas. So that it becomes like a collaboration. But the genesis, the seed of a lot of these ideas has to come from the creator. As never having wrestled, I could never tell a wrestler how to wrestle a match. But I can say, I could see a scenario where this might happen, and it fosters a conversation. It gets the ball rolling. And then let them create it. They're the artists. They're the athletes. Go do it. You know, it's wonderful.
Well, Kevin, you're leaving us in a couple of weeks.
What?
Another trip for you, huh?
Thought it was another rumor.
Oh, no. Last time we were on, you were telling us your world travels, and you're hopping on another cross-country flight here.
I love it. It's a lot of fun. I didn't know I would love it as much as I do. This is, I think, trip number 6 to Japan, leaving on the 1st, returning on the 7th, good old Delta Airlines, and I'm looking forward to it. This year is different. This year it kind of feels new. It feels invigorated. It feels fresh. Even though the both Tanahashi and Okada are in the main event and the semi-main event respectively, it's a, you know, with Kenny Omega battling Okada and Naito, Tanahashi, Intercontinental title, I just think it's got a lot of substance, but it feels familiar, but it feels different. And it what a great way to wrap up last year and start anew. I'm very, very excited.
What's your thought on Kenny Omega? I don't think we talked about him much the last time you were on. Like, what do you think has been different, like, the last year or so since he came into New Japan? Like, the first year, it felt like he was kind of in the background. But this year especially, to shoot up to the main event – and to win the G1 climax, like,
right.
It's amazing. And we, our buddy Jordan and Glenn and I, we've been doing some live watches, something we used to do with Justin and Scott. And we saw him in DDT in some of these just bizarre matches. And they were only like 5-6 years ago. They're not that long ago. And now to see him going from fighting in a campsite with this terrible perm. To going into the main event in the Tokyo Dome against Okada for the heavyweight title. Like, what do you think he's done, like, to get to this point? What has changed with him?
Well, I think you know, his world and New Japan's world changed last January 5th at New Year's Dash when he declared himself a heavyweight, excommunicated AJ Styles from Bullet Club, and made his intentions known that he plans on ruling everything. And he did. He made good on every promise. That's one of the great things about, you know, Omega in a year like this. Somebody like Hirooki Goto, who's had opportunity after opportunity and has yet to finally grab the brass ring. I don't think anybody could say that, even if Omega comes up short at Wrestle Kingdom, I don't think anybody could say, wow, that was disappointing. He came up short. I think he's exceeded everybody's goals that they had for this past year. And I'm sure Kenny is exactly where he thought he would be, which is a remarkable skill to have that forethought and that vision, and to be able to see 5-10 steps down the road and never thinking about where he was. And so many times we say, you know, people do this all the time and they're like, well, hey, listen, I didn't go to the greatest college in the world, and you know, I didn't go to an Ivy League school, and I wasn't raised, I didn't grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth. Who cares? None of that matters. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he was a, you know, he did wrestle in campgrounds and have wacky stuff going on, I don't think he looks at that anything other than the totality of his experience that's all led to now, and makes him the well-rounded performer that he is. I guarantee you, if the roof leaked in the Tokyo Dome and it was raining outside and water is hitting the canvas, that Omega would be prepared for that change of environment because of that experience in DDT. I bet Okada's never wrestled in a campground. He's probably not prepared.
Yeah, and it goes back to that creativity too, right? To have that in your back pocket, to have the experience and the mind to be able to pull out that kind of stuff.
Yeah, look at what we do is, you know, you create a wrestler in a video game and you put him in different situations, and the arena could be wherever, you know, it could be outside, could be inside, mountaintop, you know, gates of hell, doesn't matter. it's our imagination. And that's really what these different promotions have afforded Kenny and all performers the ability to do. Use their imagination, their creativity, and go from there. Some wrestlers, I'm sure, from the 50s and 60s would probably look at the wrestling of today and go, what? But I have a feeling that if our guys were taken back in time, they would just see how little they had to work with back then. Mm. So, of course, their minds were, you know, stilted and their imaginations were tempered. They didn't have the ability to think that far outside the box. So just to see what, you know, Kenny has done in a huge spot, that match with Naito. I mean, he won the G1 the night before when he beat, you know, when he beat Naito. The match with Goto, I think, was secondary, even though Goto really put forth a main event effort and had the crowd convinced that he was going to win. But in the end, it was Omega. Omega won when he beat Naito.
Well, real quick, though, Kevin, you talk about that ability that Omega possesses, and I'm wondering, you know, through your time in the business and just seeing various talents come and go, is that something that is a skill? Is it something that can be learned, or is that something that you either have or you don't?
That's a good question. Okay, so just as I'm kind of going through the Rolodex of my minds, I think the bigger the star, the bigger the ability to create on the fly, and the bigger the ability to think outside the box. I think that's such is the case for any entrepreneur, any business owner. You're willing to take risks. You're willing to do things differently. It's a risk reward scenario. You might come up empty and wind up in bankruptcy court, or you could be, you know, the richest man in the world. It just depends on how you stick the landing. You know, Austin was more rebellious and edgy and physically taking risks before he got hurt. Then he got very cautious. Mm. The Rock was always very carefree and never put any limits or any pressure on himself, or, you know, because of the surroundings. So he never was fazed by, well, I'm in front of 70,000 people here at WrestleMania. To him, it was just another match. It was just, you know, he was cool with everything. Jericho walked into WWF back then with a chip on his shoulder, and one that he still has to this day. You know, The Undertaker has always been a, you know, rooted in tradition, but has, you know, opened his mind to thinking outside the box and has reinvented himself time after time after time after time. And these guys are the trendsetters. These guys are the ones that the young wrestlers all pattern themselves after. I don't, you know, those that stay constricted in their little box. A lot of times wrestlers get over a little bit. They get successful a little bit. And then they just want to play the hits. I think you need a big body of work before you can just go play the hits. But when you get, you know, when you get to the stage of, you know, a Stone Cold Steve Austin or an Undertaker or The Rock, John Cena, you can play the hits now. You've done enough. But you got to be more than just a one-trick pony. Because you got to have longevity, staying power. You got to be tried and true. You got to be proven in big spots. So I think that all of that kind of works. There's no wrong way to do it. But I think that everybody could, if you put those guys around the table, they could probably share a lot of commonality in their experiences.
Well, one more entrepreneur, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, there's so much to talk about Wrestle Kingdom, but, you know, it's kind of been the theme of people getting out of their shell and becoming their own person, perhaps, you know, getting out of a system. And Cody, parentheses, Rhodes. Parentheses.
Close quote. Man,
yeah. Between Final Battle and now this special appearance on January 4th, is this your first experience working with him? I'm trying to think back, you know, from the shows you did with Justin and Scott back in the day. Had you had any interaction with Cody before this run? And how did you deal with him as he came in? You know, what was, you know, kind of the reaction of the locker room? And what was it like working with him?
What a good guy. Met him for the first time face-to-face at Final Battle.
Okay.
Had never worked with him before. But certainly shared a lot of common experience and were able to, you know, kind of get to work right away that day. The story that he wound up telling, I think, was one that shocked everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's what made Final Battle so good. It was its unpredictability. But then when everybody saw I think it was 2 or 3 days later on December 10th, the release of the video by, you know, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes is joining Bullet Club. It's like, whoa, dang, okay. Now it all starts to make sense. Now I understand how the two sides, you know, I saw one page of a book. I saw the other page of the book. Now I understand, oh, this was the book. Cool. It's great. It really is. I'll put it to you this way. It's one of the nicest people I've ever met. And I was like, gosh, I forget who I said this to. I'm like, I was half joking, you know, but I was like, you know, a real cynical person could think Cody is a real piece of crap. You know, like he's so nice and he's so well-dressed and he's got a beautiful wife and he does everything well. What's his agenda? You know what I mean?
He thinks he's better
than all.
That's
the way it was. It was like, damn, this guy's really freaking cool. And just treated everybody with respect, and you knew he meant business, and his wife was sweet. It was just, again, I look forward to seeing him again. Because he's a tremendously creative guy who's got a lot of heart and passion and a lot of things that he wants to do. And he's broken out of the, he's broken out of the bubble. And, he's on fire right now. I'm very, I'm glad that we have an opportunity to work with him.
And it's cool to hear, too, that, you know, someone who can have success in one, you know, in his whole family situation and come in and still be grounded and respectful and fit right in with the with the gang, as it were.
Yeah,
I felt bad. Sure. The match was announced with Juice Robinson. The poor guy. He's got Cody Rhodes in his first match in New Japan. He had Kevin Steen in his first match on WWE TV. So I'm expecting Cody to have a broken nose by the end of the match.
Well, you know what? I think this is a hell of an opportunity for Juice Robinson, who did great with Tanahashi in Tag League and now gets the opportunity to wrestle Cody in front of 40,000 at the Tokyo Dome.
In a singles match.
In a singles match. Let me tell you something. I think Juice is going to have one hell of a big year. And I don't know if you guys saw this, but Juice Robinson is going to wrestle Marty Scurll in Atlanta for Ring of Honor for the Ring of Honor World Television title on January 14th.
I did not see that. That's going to be an intriguing matchup.
Yes. And Ed, we may not have announced it yet, but I'm announcing it because I saw the story written. So there you go.
Breaking news.
We're breaking news. So in the span of, 2 months, he goes from teaming with Tanahashi in Tag League to wrestling. And then in the span of 10 days, wrestling Cody, Tokyo Dome, Wrestle Kingdom, Marty Scurll, World Television title, center stage in Atlanta. Hell yeah. That's a good way to kick off a year.
Some of us have been talking, just in chats over the last week privately, about how much fun this is right now to see all these guys traveling around the world and having unique matchups. And, with WWE wrapping up some other people and taking some chances, it's given a lot of other people some opportunities, both companies taking chances and the individuals taking chances. So to see, Juice coming back to the States to have seeing high profile single matches and in Japan, it's fun. It's really fun, not just for the wrestlers, but for us as fans.
Another example of betting on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That when time was up in NXT, he took a hell of a risk, but knew exactly what he needed to do. And as soon as I met him, I liked him. I see just main event talent written all over him. And he's a good guy, and he's going to be very, very successful. But that's the theme. It's, man, do it yourself. Go out on a limb. Ciampa and Gargano as NXT. Are they NXT tag team champions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't remember. But that's that's sort of that blueprint. Sometimes that's why guys will leave Ring of Honor. That's why guys will come to Ring of Honor. It's because now we're in this age of not being afraid to take chances. And those who rely on the security and safety of one company to provide it ultimately run the risk of getting stale and losing that edge. So it's a fine line between your own safety, your own security, the company's safety, the company's security, and really what's doing best for the performer and the company in the long run. It can't be an open border scenario, but it also can't be a Berlin Wall. We have to have some form of trade going back and forth. And if it's not between the companies, like it used to be in the territory days, then it needs to be the wrestlers themselves who make their own decisions and set their own schedules and decide where they want to go. Back in the day, guys like Mark Lewin and King Curtis, Bruiser Brody, they were the real nomads. They were the trailblazers. They were the pioneers.
Yeah.
Now everybody went territory to territory, but they did it their own way. They set their own schedule. They didn't want to be limited to or held down by one certain booking office. So they ran afoul and weren't, they didn't get to sit at the, at the head of the table many times. And a lot of times they weren't even invited to the dinner. But that spirit, I think, lives in a lot of guys today. And that's part of what, we were saying, Steve, about this time and this era being so special.
Yeah, and it really is. And I like talking about this part of wrestling. Just not really necessarily the psychology of it all, what you see in the ring. But what happens with these, they're nomads, they're artists, as you said, and it's just an interesting character study of people and how they make their living and their choices in life. It's really intriguing.
Like those of us here on the Place to Be Nation, you know, we make our livings basically panhandling, right? Is that what you guys do? Because that's – because Christmas is like, you know, Brad is late with whatever checks he was sending. You know, I just – if Brad is listening, you know.
Brad, they don't call him the Paul Heyman of the podcast role for nothing.
So. Man, oh, man.
All right, Kevin, we'll let you go so you can start wrapping your Christmas present. Oh, you want to stick around? You can talk. You want to talk a little total nonstop deletion?
Hey, hold on, JR. Hold on. I think you know we'd be remiss if we didn't ask this favor of Brother Kelly because
we don't ask him enough favors. That's for sure.
No, we don't ask him enough. So I mean, he's like Santa Claus. He's the gift that keeps on giving. But you know, this next year coming up, 2017, it's I can tell it's going to be a divisive year. People are going to be tense talking about politics and various subjects. So I think Ring of Honor can be the company that brings this nation, nay, this world together with one match. The Young Bucks versus Hulk Hogan and Jay Lethal, Final Battle 17. Let's make it happen, Kevin.
Let me tell you something. The Young Bucks would welcome this. They would embrace this opportunity with open arms. As far as their opponents, I don't know whether or not Jay Lethal would have anything to do with it. But I think it would be an interesting conversation. When you see, if you go back and you watch the finish of the match, Skrull and Ospreay against the Young Bucks from Leicester on the Reach for the Sky tour, it was highlighted in the Vice magazine piece about the Young Bucks, and then you can see the gif. It's just, you know, a life of its own. What do you want to do? Do you want to have a match, or do you want to, you know, have this, you know, make history? That's what we're going to see a lot of in this coming year. And, you know, I think so. We've gone through kind of a real dark era, and we've waited for companies to seize the means of production and to take the assets that they have and figure it all out. And eventually the workers have said enough is enough. And we're going to make a stand and create our own buzz and create our own energy. And the companies are the ones that are benefiting it right now, benefiting from it right now. So best is yet to come, boys. It's going to be very exciting. Final Battle was a blast. Wrestle Kingdom is going to be enormous. It's going to be the start of a very, very newsworthy year for New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I'm glad to be a part of it. We're looking at as many as 20 events broadcast in English on njpwworld.com.
Oh, wow.
And everybody can get signed up now to make sure they can see Wrestle Kingdom live, which I think will start 4 p.m. local time. So 3 a.m., maybe a little earlier. I'm not quite sure if they're going to do a pre-show. But, you know, that's just one you stay up all night for and you just get really hammered and then try to stay up all the way through the main event. But we're really excited about that. And now at njpwworld.com, you can see all 25 January 4th events for free. So you can go do that. Have something to do with yourself over these next few days. Because what? Other than, I don't even know, a couple of bowl games. What else happens around the 25th, 26th? I don't even know anymore. So
I go into my happy place. But that's just my own family stuff, and we can talk about that another day.
Gotcha.
You know, Kevin, I call you fat and pale, and you get mad at me. Nate calls you Santa Claus, and you're all happy and jolly. I don't
know.
No.
Trust me. That did not just wash over me. But he used the word nay, which I love.
Yeah, he's calling you a horse.
He blocked me from critiquing. Don't worry, Nate, I got you.
Like the white paste that goes over your skin and washed over you. But
I got you.
All right, Kev. Thank you so much. We hope you have a wonderful, happy holiday season. We hope you have a safe, happy, and healthy trip to Japan. Good luck in your fantasy football championship in the PCBN League this weekend. Is this your second straight defense if you win this thing?
What a shock.
Yeah, what a shock.
What an absolute shock.
Everyone's laying down for the big man.
I'm just ready for, you know, some competition. Get me some competition.
Give us a little tease. Can you give us a little Bret Hart on the way out here?
No. Oh, Jesus. How did I do Bret Hart?
I don't know, but it's really good.
I don't have the script in front of me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, It was a better Bret Hart.
It was a good
than
Bret
I anticipated.
Hart. It was a good Bret
my
Hart.
My brother Love. I was very happy with my brother Love. I was also very happy with Paul Bearer.
Yes, I got kind of, a few people have heard the rough edit, and they said your Paul Bearer was the best so far.
Paul Bearer was good.
I think Scott said he liked your. Oh no, Scott said he liked your Razor Ramon the best.
Yeah, that was a lot of reading.
Yeah,
I just think it was a ginormous rib on me. So again, you know, you got over on me this year, Rosero, but next year, you know, vengeance will be mine.
2017, the year of Kelly.
That's right.
All right.
Peace out, boys. Merry Christmas.
See you, brother. Christmas.
All right, brother.
We'll be right back. Aaron George will be here. We're going to talk some Total Nonstop Deletion, wrapping up the Hardy story, maybe. I don't know, at least for 2016. And then we'll share some Christmas thoughts as well. We'll be right back after this break.
For the ho-ho-ho, cause I know when there's a Christmas uptown, ain't no chimney for Santa to come down. Now to me, PD, I had a lot. Yeah.
PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Looks like this dynasty is broken. It's delightful to see you on the right side of the light again, superhero. Cheers.
Official! Official! I have a man, I have a pinball attempt.
One, two, three, yes!
Yes. Even the man with three H's would be proud of the way we buried this young, promising talent.
Back on Clotheslines and Headlines, episode 14. Happy holidays, everyone. Of course, you got JR, you got the great Steve Willie, and of course, I am the godfather, Nate Milton. And it would not be a holiday episode without a gift, without a present. And we have a present in store for you this segment because last week, the good people at TNA, Impact Wrestling, gave us Total Nonstop Deletion and Tag Team Apocalypto, a full 2 hours of Broken Brilliance. And in the spirit of that show, it only seems right that I bring in my tag team partner for all things TNA, the exquisite, the extraordinary Aaron George. Hey, Aaron, how are you doing, my brother?
The seven deities have spoken to me, and they have given me a premonition. TNA is never going to be this good again, ever. Ever in our lives.
Oh man. So have you recovered yet from this momentous event?
Oh, I was literally shaking, and now I've stopped shaking, and the sheer ecstasy pouring out of my body is magnificent.
Well, just a little bit of background for the folks who have not seen this, and if you haven't seen this, what the hell is wrong with you? Yeah,
shame on you.
But basically this was the big culmination, at least for this year, of everything that's gone down so far with the Hardys, from the final deletion to the deleter decay to the deleter treat. And this was the big wrap up for the year. And this was also the event that was being shot during the, let's say, real life deletion of Billy Corgan from the promotion. And so there was some doubt as to whether this would be finished or if it were finished, would it be what it was intended to be? But fortunately, the Hardys and Jeremy Borash and all those good folks were able to give us this thing. And, yeah, let's just go through it, Aaron. I'll kind of lead us down this path, and you can help fill in the details. And, you know, Steve and JR can come along for the ride.
Let's do it. Let's descend into this madness.
Yes. And the first place we go, and it seems only fitting in this political season that we start the show off with a bit of fake news, because we are given the greatness of the Channel 7 news team, which almost caught me off guard, Aaron, because it almost felt like a real newscast. And I was like, why is this newscast popping up on Pop TV? And then as soon as I saw what was going on, I was like, okay, this is going to be good, because we had our anchorman, I'm drawing a blank on his name.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. anchorman, handsome black dude.
Yep, very handsome.
Who is the color commentator, I guess, for CWF. And then we go to our reporter, who I cannot forget this name because it was one of the first things that made me laugh out loud. We get Betty Sue Fuentes.
Yep. In front of a live volcano.
Yes, in front of a live volcano on the Hardy compound.
Gilbert Corsi was the news reporter.
Gilbert Corsi, yes. Yes, oh, Gilbert Corsi and Betty Sue Fuentes, the Channel 7 action news team.
And giving this whole thing like dignity, like the day of deletion is upon us.
Yes.
Right. Oh, it's so good.
It really sold it, because you know he could have easily played this over the top, and he was very much like, I thought I was looking at Lester Holt. You know, he's like, it's that time of year again. It's time for the day of deletion, and let's go live to Betty Sue Fuentes on the scene.
And they're both CWF on-screen personalities, Betty Sue and Gilbert. It reminded me of, you guys ever been, I don't know, I'm not sure if you have, but have anyone been to Universal Studios, the Jaws ride, where they have like that fake news report as you're waiting in line, like, you know, oh, update, oh, a shark is, they're doing like all these fake like local news and access channel. Like, it reminded me of that. Like, it had that real homey, small town feel to it. It was really well done.
Yes. So Betty Sue informs us of what's going on, including a live on the scene interview with Itchweed.
Who's referred to as a local landscaping enthusiast in the graphic.
Itchweed to me is like hit or miss. Like in all of these skits, like there's been some times where I've really enjoyed his presence, and other times when I haven't. But I'd say in terms of this show tonight, at Total Nonstop Deletion, I dug Jeff Hardy's portrayal of Itchweed.
Yeah, I the only thing I wish with the Itchweed is I wish they would stop saying it's a creation of Jeff Hardy's mind. I just wish it was this entity that just lived in this world and never got mentioned.
Like, nobody finds it strange that he shows up whenever Jeff leaves.
No. If Clark Kent can do it, Jeff Hardy can do it with this monstrosity.
So we are taken into the Dome of Deletion, if you will, after a wonderful opening bit where we get Rebby on the piano.
That whole – it's a whole montage, right? Of like Jeff landscaping to his but playing his weed whacker as a guitar, and Matt peacefully boating on the lake, and Senior Benjamin preparing the field for massacre.
Yes. So then we're taken inside the Dome of Deletion, where I get maybe my first disappointment of the night, and that is Josh Matthews on commentary, folks.
I know, that was the worst, and it I'm sure we're going to talk about the flaws of this thing, but this is a major one. They should have just had their own world, like whatever it is, like an impersonator of Meek Mahan or whatever. Like,
I didn't even mind Borash though, because I think Borash is better at that than better at announcing period than Matthews. But B, Borash was actually involved with the creativity.
Sure, he had a big role in it
on this thing. Yeah, so I wouldn't have minded if it was just JB kind of stuck in this crazy world, but to have both of them, that was one thing that kind of took away from it.
I wish they would have thrown some money at JR and gotten him to just do it straight, just straight. Because if you hear him on his podcast with Matt Hardy, he just plays to the character.
Oh my goodness.
And like they're talking about Rebby kidnapping Maxwell and him. Oh, that's heinous. And
actually, you could have had like the Bizarro Josh and the Pope. And bring back two characters from Matt Hardy's past and have JR and MVP. because the MVP was great when Matt was on VIP Lounge too.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would have been like MVP. What do you think about your former partner? I don't know what's up with this dude, JR.
What I know is his mouth is on the wall, and we're coming out of it.
I thought, man,
Stutzy was right there. We're inside the Dome of Delusion.
Stutzy was right there to be able to do commentary. The scribe could have sat in the second seat.
So commentary issues aside, Aaron, the very first match we get on this show is the debut of the next great second-generation wrestler. Forget yes. Greg Gagne. Forget David Flair. Forget Charlotte Flair. Forget any of those people, because we saw the debut of King Maxwell.
A lot to unpack. There's a lot to unpack here. I think we should deal with the elephant in the room right away. After his victory, he looked at the camera and put up one finger. So are we in for a Goldberg-esque streak from King Maxwell?
Oh, I would love – oh, the problem is we'd probably only be able to get up to 10 matches because I'm not – you know, not to disparage the young king, but I'm not sure – if he can count, you know, if he can rationalize, if I get to 20, that's 2 10 fingers. Or, you know, I don't think he has that cognitive reasoning yet. So 10 might be the most we can get on that.
I mean, he might be on a whole other different plane of existence, right? We don't know anything about King Maxwell or his parentage or what they really are, you know? Here, like, the thing that struck me, I mean, it's amazing. Number one, that they had a baby wrestle with Rockstar Spud. But is this kid not going to be traumatized by watching his grandfather taser a man?
Like, I think that's the least, like, that's the least shocking thing he's seen in that household.
Oh, like, I was watching it, and my wife came by and was like, what is this? And she was at the part later where they're, like, recapping his kidnapping and everything. And I was like, I was laughing, and she was just appalled. like, what is this child abuse they're doing to this child?
Oh, his therapy bill is going to be through the roof.
And we must mention, by the way, Senior Benjamin's Ribera Steakhouse jacket, which
yes.
was
so oh, amazing.
Yes, like he's got a whole other life that we know nothing about, and I hope they go deeper into that, like next season.
Got nothing but time to do that. I love how
about his great wars with his great wars with Chono in the mid-'80s.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Maxwell's driving ability.
Because
that entrance in the Power Wheels was one of my favorite things of the night. And he drove it perfectly. I mean, we got one of those things at home. And, you know, at least the way I drive it, you can, you know, drive into a tree. It's hard to keep it straight and impeccable.
And the pressure this kid was under, too. Like this, the seven deities told them that if they didn't win the match later, the sacred land of deletion would be decimated. Mm. And he still pulled off this.
and he had perfect form on the pin cover, too.
Wonderful. And, wonderful.
And again, great use of Rockstar Spud. Like, I thought he's another a character that fits in this world, given his personality and what he can do in terms of being an entertainer.
I want your stupid kid gone.
So angry about it. So angry.
Oh, so yes. This was great. But, you know, Steve just mentioned Maxwell coming in. Might have been his favorite moment. I think my favorite moment was what happened next when we got some visitors to the Hardy compound.
Is this when everybody started showing up?
Yes, because we got in between the matches in the first half of the show, we'd have various people showing up for Apocalypto. And the first team that showed up was a surprise to me. I did not expect them to show up. But we got a knock at Matt's door, and Matt opens the door. And who was there, Brother George?
The Express That Rock and Rolls.
Ricky Morton and Robert freaking Gibson.
And they were offered green beans and invited into the home.
Ricky Morton's like, can I just have a beer?
Wonderful.
Oh, man. I thought this was great. Like, I thought I just loved this moment.
Nate and I were discussing this off air before, guys. Do you think the Rock and Roll Express look good or bad? Because we decided that they look good for the Rock and Roll Express, but bad for like a normal human being. I don't know if you guys agree. Okay.
Yeah, your humanity, they don't look human anymore.
Right, right. But for them, they look as bad as I expected them to.
Like for 80s wrestlers, like they I think they look all right, especially Robert,
who are still wrestling.
Yeah.
And Ricky with the same haircut.
Yes. And cross eyes.
30 plus years, the same haircut.
Yeah.
Like we skipped over, but did it bother anyone else that Eddie Edwards just seemed to come from the woods?
Yeah.
Like he's just a wolf.
He's an American wolf. He should be coming from the woods. Where else should he come from?
Awesome. And also what was great with that was when Lashley arrived, he just kind of gave this look like, what the hell have I gotten myself into?
What's that title shot?
He's like, I thought Bellator's production was bad, but I'm fighting in the middle of the woods here. So after we get the Rock and Roll Express, we get a match for the number one contendership of the Knockouts Championship, which is currently held by Rosemary, and they made sure to point out she was barred from the Hardy compound because she tried to abduct Maxwell.
Yep.
It's only fair sense.
Only fair. Continuity.
So we get Sienna, and Sienna asks for, she has an open challenge, and who will answer that challenge, Brother George, but the leader of the Aerial Assault Robots, Vanguard 1.
Oh, you have no idea how happy I was. Happy and then immediately disappointed when he was ejected from the referee.
Yes, the referee said, in the state of North Carolina, the commission doesn't allow drones to wrestle. So Vanguard 1 flew off disappointed, letting us know that this was BS AF. I'll let you decode the acronym. But we did get an answer to Sienna's challenge, and that came in the form of ODB, returning to TNA, coming out of her barbecue sauce RV, which in real life was actually at the Hardy compound for like a couple days, which just like that is only in wrestling. Like I would just want to be a fly on the wall for those 2 days of her interacting with the Hardys.
Just it was like when she went to the Briscoes compound.
Yes,
the train.
For Ring of Honor. Yeah. Just keep on going down to the Hardys.
So we got ODB Aaron and her outfit. Wrestling Sienna.
Regardless of what I think of ODB, I would have much rather Vanguard 1 just fucking start shooting lasers at Sienna and then cover her for the three. Like, I want to go all the way with this.
So we got a match. We got a match. I'm not going to say it was a great match. I'm not going to say it was a bad match. It was a match.
The ref got knocked out.
The ref got knocked out, and this was probably my favorite spot of this match, and maybe one of my favorite spots of the night, because Vanguard 1 flies in and Vanguard 1 is now switched to referee mode.
Yep.
And begins to count, and right when Vanguard 1 is about to count three, the other ref pulls Vanguard 1 out of the ring.
He's jealous.
Official here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, total Attitude Era referee argument. Yeah. Only with the drone.
It's like a throwback to Earl Hebner and Jimmy Cordero's.
And Vanguard 1's holograms of 1 and 2 were impeccable.
So
this was a show that had some really great editing moments and some really terrible editing moments, and the hologram was, like you said, it was spot on.
Yes. And the crowd, we forgot to mention the crowd, which was invitation only, like Matt Hardy's closest friends. In this the Dome of Deletion, they counted along with Vanguard 1, which made it all the much better.
Very pro Vanguard 1 crowd.
But Vanguard 1 was pulled out of the ring, and while all this is going on, Sienna grabs a chair as the crowd's chanting delete, and a good little ad lib from Sienna. I'll delete that bitch, all right. Like, you know what? Good on you, Allison Kay. But she hits ODB, gets the pin, and the original referee comes in, counts for the pin. Sienna's your number one contender. But after the match, we get ODB and Vanguard 1 sharing an intimate moment, Brother George.
I kept like seeing the kid in the front row with the legalized pile driver T-shirt, and worrying like, is she just going to put his head in her tits and, like, go to town on this kid? Like, the whole thing just made me really uncomfortable.
That's the dream, Aaron.
Yeah, I know. Imagine how happy that kid would be.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, ODB, it's a lot to take in. It's a lot to take in.
Well, and this is, like, for me, like, the pros and cons of this is, like, of the whole night. Like, I love all the Vanguard 1 stuff, and it's so stupid and over the top and just ridiculous. But we go back to kind of the same kind of boring TNA-style women match. And I feel that that's one of the things that kind of hurt this night. Like, by the end of the night, I did feel it was – it felt – I mean, this is more of a big picture, but I did feel it felt long, but it was only during these moments.
Right, right. Well, it's two distinct halves of the show.
Right.
You know, you've got the first hour, which pretty much took place exclusively in the Dome of Deletion, and it was more of your regular TNA matches. You know, we had this match. We had the Eddie Edwards, Bobby Lashley title match.
Right.
But then the second half of the show was the tag team Apocalypto, and that was pretty much all outside.
Yeah, yeah, and one succeeded a lot more than the other.
Yes. And again, that brings us to our next match, which was Itchweed versus some dude named Chet Sterling, who I have no idea who this guy is.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, and this is where Itchweed, hot and cold, because you know, Itchweed does his little spots here and there, and then he's got a spot where he brings out the weed whacker, and we're looking at it from the POV of Chet Sterling, and you know, he's supposedly putting the weed whacker to this guy, which would cause a severe bodily injury.
Yeah, I was really hoping they'd pan up and the guy would just be like a bloody unconscious
mess. Right, but yeah, you'd think they would go that far, but then we pan up and Chet Sterling's t-shirt is ripped and his ring gear is ripped, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, great.
Great.
There's the out editing for you.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Oh yeah, that was awful. Yeah,
spliced in the footage.
Yeah, I was not a fan of this particular match. Even call it that.
And this is one where Josh Matthews really hurt it. Like, just go on and on about how it's Jeff Hardy. Like, we get it. Like, it's not in any way subtle.
No. Then I think. I'm trying to remember the chronology here, but I think we cut back to Betty Sue Fuentes because we're starting to see more people come to the compound, and it's either Decay or the Helms Dynasty that shows up next.
Helms Dynasty.
Shane Helms makes the remark, you know, I'm pretty familiar with natural disasters.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
Our first nod to a previous character. And the thing that got me about this, the thing that is so funny about the Helms Dynasty segments is, okay, I'm not the biggest fan of pickup trucks, but I know, you know, there's a cab and then there's the bed. Why is Helms in the cab and the Everett and Lee just standing up in the back of the truck bed? Hurricane couldn't slide over and let the other guy sit inside with him?
They weren't wearing shirts, Nate. Like, you don't want a shirtless man next
shirts
to you.
Shirts nor pants. Truck. Like, they were in full wrestling gear in the back of this man's truck in the middle of the night.
You know what I want to know is I want to know what happened to you that you're not a big fan of pickup trucks. Was there a bad experience?
Hey, I got relatives in Mississippi and Texas, man. I'm familiar with pickup trucks, so not my cup of tea.
But, you know, with them in their wrestling gear, every time they did anything wrestling-wise outside, all I could think of how uncomfortable they must have been in the grass and in the weeds.
Yep. Hey, but they're country boys, man. They're probably used to tussling outside. All sorts of horseplay. So we got that one. We also got the Decay showing up at one point outside, minus Rosemary.
Yeah, not allowed.
Not allowed. And let's see. I guess the next match would be the title match, which I actually thought, for what it was pretty good, Aaron.
I did not like it. And there's something about, for me, this their style of main event that's like – it's like a soft version of the WWE style of main event, where it looks more stylized and choreographed. And I don't know if that's how they shoot it. I don't know if it's their position in the ring, but there's something that
– I hear what you're saying, and I can see that criticism or that critique of the style of the match. And I do think when you've got someone like Lashley who was kind of brought up in that WWE style, I could see the comparison point. But what I liked about this, Aaron, was – this was probably the most "quote unquote" normal thing on the show.
Yeah,
and so the thing I was gonna be the most intrigued with was how they were gonna make this fit in this world. And I think from that standpoint, you know, whether it was the spot with Lashley powerbombing Edwards into the crowd, which is something I don't think they'd ever attempt at the Impact Zone, I thought, you know, they did a good job of kind of bringing something grounded into this fantastical world.
Yeah, I did like that. I liked when the crowd was holding him and they were for the chops and the kicks and all that. But I just wish they would have gone more with it. Yeah. I wish it would have gone more in that direction, because to me it did stand out as something vastly – it's weird. It didn't belong, like, in this world. Like, pro wrestling doesn't belong in this world. This is something new and exciting.
Right. Well, it's funny because, like, this part I didn't mind so much, but I have an issue with – what they did with Lashley and Edwards later on, and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So, but this match ends in a no contest.
They break the door.
Yeah. So, surprise for those that were expecting a title change at the Dome of Deletion. Sorry.
Just door just happened to be covered with a piece of drywall. That was interesting.
And, like, you knew they took off the real door. They didn't want to break their real door.
Right. Because Senior Benjamin ain't got no time for that.
No.
So so we go – that match ends in a no contest, and that's kind of the end of the first half of Total Nonstop Deletion.
Yeah, and then we go right off the edge here.
Yeah. Yes, if this was a little too grounded for you, Aaron,
yep.
The next 45 minutes of TV time is a whole other dimension. Because we get Tag Team Apocalypto. And Josh Matthews is gone. JB is gone.
Good.
We get this ominous voice that's kind of been the ring announcer the whole night. now it's time for Tag Team Apocalypto. And we get our first grouping of teams in the ring. Who it was? It the Hardys. The Rock and Roll Express.
The Helms people.
Helms Dynasty.
And Decay.
Decay, yep. And they start, you know, wrestling and fighting.
But before they can get starting, like, a smoke alarm goes off.
Yes.
And, like, this giant siren.
And everybody must be evacuated.
Yeah.
Which, if I'm a paying customer to this thing, I'd need my money back.
I don't know. I don't, like, would you want to be a paying customer? You're probably going to get burned with fireworks. Or
I wonder, like, at the bottom of the tickets to Tag Team Apocalypto, is it like card subject to change, no refunds?
It better be a waiver that they have to sign.
we get a bunch of smoke, and the Dome of Deletion must be evacuated. And so all these people are running out. And this leads us to an opportunity to take everybody outside.
Yeah.
And so we get various pairings of teams that spill out into the grounds of the compound, Aaron. And in this first little bit, this first act of Tag Team Apocalypto, what are some moments that really stood out for you?
Well, I mean, there was the complete arsenal of fireworks. Like,
oh, yes. Let's talk about that for a moment, because that was a great team up, because we got the
Hardys
and the Rock and Roll Express teaming up with Roman Candles and shooting at the Decay in the Helms Dynasty.
And now, like, what I loved about the first one was that when Matt Hardy started doing that to Jeff Hardy, he would always scream, like, "What is wrong with you?" Like, but now they just know the world. Like, they know what they're getting into.
Yeah, the Rock and Roll Express just buy right into it.
Nope, it's normalized. Like, they're just firing fireworks at another team. As though it's been a spot for them for the last 30 years.
And,
what did Rome do as the Hardys do?
Yes, when in Rome. But while that's going on, at various other points, at another point in the on the compound, and this is where my gripe comes in with Edwards and Lashley, Aaron. Yeah. These guys are still fighting. For what? For who? No.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, we go, it's almost like they forgot about them, or they did the whole thing and decided to edit it in after.
Right. Because it makes no sense. Like, if I'm Lashley and I'm Edwards, sure, I might fight for a couple minutes after we go outside through the door. But after a while, I'm like, the match is over. Like, why are we even doing this, man?
You know what I would have been okay with is if, like, they were fighting, like they were, and they saw the chaos around them, and then they just decided to join forces and jump into this mess.
Or if they just and this is one of my favorite little scenes from the Luke Cage Netflix series. So spoiler alert if you haven't seen it yet. But early on, like, I think it might have been the first episode, Luke goes in and busts up these thugs that are trying to rob the Chinese restaurant. And one of the thugs at the very end, after Luke stopped the bullet and, had a board broken over him, looks at the guy and he's like, "You want some too, big man?" And he's like, "Man, I don't even like these dudes," and runs away. Like, if we had just had a moment where Lashley and Edwards look at each other and they look at all the chaos and they're like, "You know what, man? I'll see you back in Orlando next week.
We'll figure this out later."
Yeah.
They went in the same car even.
Right. Like, you driving or am I driving?
I'm going to go back to the forest with the wolves.
Right. Yeah. Edwards just walks back into the forest.
With no shirt, of course.
With no shirt. But yeah, so back to the actual tag teams that are participating. We have a scene that mirrors the original Final Deletion where the team is chased to the riverbanks, running
away. Fighting on the truck. Like, there's this brawl in the back of the truck.
Yes. There's a brawl in the back of a truck.
Jeff Hardy wants the ref to go with him on his motorbike.
Oh, man, yeah. The ref's like, "You don't have a helmet.
Can I please have a helmet?" Like,
"You don't need a helmet, man. This is wrestling."
Yeah. No, it's not. It's a fight in a field with a guy fighting three guys in a truck.
The crazy person riding a dirt bike. Yeah.
Who was just playing a crazy landscape artist.
Right. And where did we end up? We ended up by the train tracks.
Well, we ended up by the highway, then by a diner for some reason. Then the train tracks. Like I imagine you're driving down the highway and you're seeing this happen. Like, you see these guys with no shirts fighting on the side of the road.
Oh, and that was the craziest thing to me, because there were several times when we saw trucks or cars pass by.
Yeah.
And I wonder what people were thinking, because, like, there's one point where all of the Helms Dynasty guys were beating up Matt Hardy. Yeah. And if I'm just driving by, I was like, "Wait a minute. What? Why are they beating up that guy?" Like, you think somebody would stop and be like, "Hey."
There was one honk. There was one big honk.
The guy did his part. He did his part, and that was it.
I wonder, like, if they had anybody call, like, the police on him. Like, "Hey, I was just driving by Susie's diner, and then I saw three guys wearing drawers and nothing else beating up on this other guy."
This one guy was wearing a fluorescent green coat. Oh, we forgot when they first introduced the Helms Dynasty on that news thing. The graphic said Helms Dynasty, and then underneath, local roughnecks.
Yes, yes.
That's their job description, which I thought was brilliant.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. So we get. Try to think in the order of this, Aaron. Do we go from here to the Decay at their own little part?
At the fence.
Okay, so the Decay are at the gates of the Hardy compound.
They're just murdering people.
And there's like a gaggle of people out front. A lot of them are CWF talent. And they're kind of coming in one by one. You've got the Bruiserweights who go in first, and they're squashed. You got a team called the Ugly Ducklings. And at one point, Crazy Steve and Abyss, I believe it might have been with the Ugly Ducklings. One of the ducklings gets chokeslammed, and then Crazy Steve proceeds to snap the neck.
Hey, he broke his neck. He killed him.
Murdered
of the other duckling, and you cut to the team is Showtime, Dirty Daddy and Snooty Fox outside the gates. And I don't know which one is which, but one of the guys is like, "Your boy dead." And then the other one's like, "Yeah, your boy dead." Which at that point, if you just saw Crazy Steve murder somebody, why would you stick around for this thing?
No, Crazy Steve is really comfortable with his tendencies, his homicidal tendencies.
Like, think about this. Like, why would you stick around? Because you're not fighting for a trophy. You're not fighting for belts. You're not even fighting for cash. You're fighting for this mythical title of the best team in time and space. Like, that's
an honor, Nate. Don't disparage the
title. It's an arbitrary title that doesn't pay the bills.
How dare you, sir?
Like, if I'm Dirty Daddy and Snooty Fox, I'm like, you know what? Let me see if I can catch a ride with Lashley and Edwards. But amongst the teams that show up at the front gate, we got Rockstar Spud, who's waiting on his big surprise partner to show up. But we also see, and this was another great bit, the appearance of the Bravado Brothers.
They just show up in suits. I don't know what they thought they were coming to.
Well, they're usually wrestling in like a cardigan. They bring like wear a cardigan or a little scarf.
it was so great. Like, even if you didn't know who these guys were, like, just the little bit of time they had on screen, their presence was pretty cool. Because Spud's like, "Who are you guys? You haven't heard of us? We're the world famous Bravado Brothers."
Like, there's a lot of balls for them to call themselves world famous. Around this time, too, Abyss smashes a guy's head in with a giant rock.
Yes, that did happen. So there's at least two bodies on the Decay's account. So we cut from this back to, I believe, the Hardys and the Dynasty, the Helms Dynasty.
Yeah, this is where they're outside the diner and the train tracks. They were just beside the highway before.
And so from there, when do we get to the boat? When do we get to the riverside? I mean,
it's after Hornswoggle shows up.
Okay, so let's go back then. Let's go back to the gate. Yeah. And spoiler alert: Spud's big surprise tag team partner is Hornswoggle. Hornswoggle.
Yep. Or Swoggle, as he's known now.
Or Swoggle. Yes. Yes. What'd you make of that surprise, Aaron? Were you amused by that?
Nope.
He's the king of small style.
Yes, the king of small style. I do like that T-shirt.
Yes. Look, of everything that happened here, it was the Abyss and Crazy Steve parts I didn't like the most. Because it's when they started – I was fine with them murdering people. When they started talking, it was too much. But yeah, no, I don't know. Hornswoggle, it's fine, I guess. Like, it kind of showed that, like, the well is a bit dry for TNA right now.
Yeah. Well, see, I thought they would do – and here's another criticism. I mean, it's not a big criticism, but it's kind of like what could have been. I wish they would have had more old-school teams show up.
Yeah. Yeah, like, what's Demolition doing? Get them in
there. That would have been so great considering the fact that they've been in the news so much because of the New Day record.
Yeah, you can't get Volkov and the Sheik to kind of stumble out here.
What's Sweet Stan and Beautiful Bobby doing right now?
Exactly.
Oh, the express that runs at midnight.
Ah, the two cool gentlemen.
Oh, if a Diesel and Razor showed up or Hall and Nash?
But the fake ones.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the fake ones still works for the WWE.
That's right. That's true.
So I don't know if they can get him. Maybe they team him up with NWO Sting.
This is the time where you wish there was some kind of I can't say the word. I'm laughing too much. Some kind of agreement with the WWE because, like a New Day appearance would have been really
that would have been amazing.
Or even having Lita answer that challenge earlier, just to tie it into all the Hardy badness.
That would have been great. Just the Hardys, anyone else want to challenge us? And you just hear the trombone playing in the background as the New Day approach.
Which I'm surprised they didn't do. Like, I'm surprised they didn't do something with the trombone or because they've been hyping it so much on Twitter and whatnot.
So we got not only did we get Hornswoggle, but we also saw James Storm show up with
the guys in the neutral masks.
Let's say the DCC ?
Yeah. The DCC without the main members of the DCC.
Right. So just James Storm showing up. Which, Steve and I were talking beforehand of maybe this is a deal where they couldn't get everybody there because of what was going on behind the scenes in terms of the uncertainty. But it felt like, was this supposed to be a thing? And this was how they worked around it or what was going on with Kingston and Bram at the time.
And how sad is it that it's James Storm that has to go there?
Yeah,
poor James Storm.
This guy hadn't had a hard enough time in TNA the last couple of years. Like I was, hoping for a revolution nod from Abyss, though.
Yeah, or I could have also dealt with Chris. What's Wildcat Chris Harris doing?
Oh, Chris Harris. Oh, yeah. Oh, America's Most Wanted. That would have been fun.
Yeah, like what the hell? What could he be doing? Like, you can't take a night off from the toll booth to go to the Hardy compound,
right? But instead of any of those guys, we got the sodomized truck driver show up underneath the mask, which was, you know, if that's what we got, it was still a pretty cool little tie back, little callback.
Yeah, it was great.
So we got the sodomized truck driver who took a super kick from James Storm. And James Storm kind of walks off disgusted, like, well, why the hell did I even come all the way out of here?
Yeah.
Going back to Leafers Ford.
Thinking about his glorious former friend.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been great. That would have been great.
He's another guy who murdered someone on camera in the last 2 years.
So then we go from there to...
The boat.
The Lake of Reincarnation. And Brother George, tell us about this.
Well, I mean, they beat up Matt Hardy next to Skarsgård, the dilapidated boat, and they cover him for the 1-2. And I don't know if it was Matt Hardy moving it with his mind or Skarsgård becoming
Skarsgård, help me!
Yeah, but Skarsgård shifts and breaks up the pin in two,
which was beautiful because then we cut to. The Hell's Dynasty triple teaming on Skarsgård.
Screaming, kick that boat's ass!
I hate you, dilapidated boat!
And they're just pounding the shit out of this boat.
Which leads
jumping
to,
up and down, they're punching
yes.
it.
and it leads to Helms getting knocked into the Lake of Reincarnation for the first of two trips. And he pops back up, and we... go to Matt and Jeff, and Matt's like, this is the most hideous reincarnation yet.
He's not happy. No.
No. The camera pans back around, and instead of Shane Helms, we get Sugar Shane Helms from Three Count.
Yep. And they proceed to do the worst dance in the history of wrestling. Now think about that. In the history of wrestling, the worst dance. We've had Vince McMahon strut to When the Saints Go Marching In. We've had Stand Back. And Trevor Lee, I don't know what's wrong with his body, but it just does not move in any sort of coherent way.
Well, yeah, for someone who's so good at wrestling, he has no coordination when it comes to dancing.
No.
So, and then Shane Helms kind of looks around and he's like, wait a minute. You're not Shannon. You're not Evan. And he is probably super kicked by the Helms Dynasty in what might be our only nod to the Butts of Youth on this particular show.
Back into the Lake of Reincarnation, of course.
Yes. And then we go to the Helms Dynasty, double teaming on Matt Hardy. All looks lost, but there's a hero.
There's a ref in the porta potty. Like, they pass by a portable toilet, and there's a ref, an obscure ref inside of it that has to come out and call the match.
Then we get maybe the most talked about or memed moment from this particular show, Brother George, and that is not only a reappearance of a former WWE superstar, but a reference to a current WWE executive.
Oh, yep. So. The Hurricane, wearing some title belt. I don't know what that
right.
was.
What the hell belt was it?
Yeah, no. I couldn't get a look at it, but why? What is he the champion of? He's in this new superhero costume. He's flying around with special effects. And
the special effects were great.
And the sounds, like the magic.
I think the belt was just there to hold the pants, the suit up. That's my guess.
Well, he comes in, and he teams up with Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy being happy that he's on the right side of the light now.
Yes.
And they bury them alive, right?
They hit the Helms Dynasty with shovels.
Shovels, right. And then they bury
and
them
then
alive.
They bury them.
Yeah, and then even the man with three H's would be proud of us, the burial of this young, promising talent.
And then they cut to like the cheesy 70s. Wink and nod and thumbs up to the camera, and they're like, oh, that's just brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure even Triple H himself would get a chuckle out of that.
The man with three H's?
Like, I'm here for Triple H Shade in general, but just the way they did it, which was so completely tongue-in-cheek and completely fun. I think even Hunter himself would have smiled at that.
Well, sure, and it's all in this world, this insane world, right? So, like, you can't take any of it seriously.
No. But then we cut from that back to the Decay side of things, and Hornswoggle has just decided to run up on Bobby Lashley, who is still fighting with Eddie Edwards for some damn
reason. Right. Yeah, just right outside the house now, right? This beautiful brick house.
Why, Bobby?
Go home. No one's counting this pin for you. Please go home, Bobby.
And Hornswoggle tries to spear Lashley. Doesn't work.
Nope, bounced right off.
And as Lashley is like, you know, what the hell? He turns around and Eddie Edwards again jumps on him to start the fight.
But Hornswoggle mysteriously has disappeared. I don't know if he disintegrated when he hit Lashley and fell off. He's just gone.
I wish they would have made him turn to dust.
Oh, yeah.
Go on, Nick.
No, after you, Aaron.
I was going to say, there's also this weird, and I think it's the Bravado Brothers, right? Even before the Hardys or someone, the Bravado Brothers are chasing someone into the compound.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Helms Dynasty.
The Helms Dynasty locks the door, and the ref starts yelling at them and starting to disqualify them for locking the door.
Right. Yeah, that leads us back inside where Hornswoggle and Spud try to team up.
Yeah, and it was just so strange. Like, you're going to get disqualified for locking this door. Like, if everything that's happening, that's the rule? Like, you lock
the
door?
Hornswoggle, Hornswoggle turns on Spud, gives him the tadpole splash, and then he's like, he's all yours, guys. And then he walks away, and that's when he runs into Lashley.
Right, okay.
So Hornswoggle and Spud are eliminated. Then is it now when we go to our scaffold match?
It must be.
Yes, because we have the Rock and Roll Express and the Hardys in the ring, and it's actually, again, for their age and for the era that they came up in, the Rock and Roll Express acquit themselves pretty well.
They're doing fine. Like with what they're doing, they're not actually doing anything. They're just they just keep locking up.
Yeah.
I like that he referenced Night of the Skywalkers, though. That was good.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yes, because we got Matt and Robert, which, again, nice little touch here because both guys are kind of tangling with their counterpart.
Yeah.
Whereas, Ricky and Jeff and Matt and Robert. Matt and Robert are on the ground, and Ricky and Jeff are in these cranes or lifts. And they're just like, all they're doing is collar and elbow tie-ups on each side of the lift.
Of a crane, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they can't do anything. It's going to die. They're 60 years old.
And then, what is it, Matt?
Matt Hardy just sends him to the heavens.
Yeah, he subdues Robert, which allows him to control Ricky's crane.
Yeah.
And push Ricky up into the sky. While Jeff does a swanton from his crane on top of – oh, he misses Robert. somehow, again, Jeff Hardy, the only guy in these things that takes real bumps.
Yeah. And then even Matt Hardy, like, oh, you spot monkey. Are you okay?
Yes, you spot monkey. And then Ricky's down. They lift up Robert's down. They lift up Ricky's crane. And Ricky's like, hey, get me down, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Hey. Come on. And then right when they're fading away from that scene, he's like, please.
Yeah, please. Like,
Ricky Morton, who knew he had this acting ability? good job, Ricky Morton. Like, I think the Rock and Roll Express, for their little bit of time in this thing, was they came off well.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this was a line that they gave him, but he yells, Matt Hardy, you broken son of a bitch.
Yeah. He's like I saw some complaining online, which is where you'll find a lot of complaining. Like, this disrespects the legacy of the Rock and Roll Express. I'm like, why? Like, this is fun, man. Like, if anything, for the younger generation, it probably makes them want to go back and check out who were these guys.
This is the best use of them since, like, 1993.
Yeah.
At least. Yeah.
Not that's not too far of a stretch.
No.
So then I think, have we made our way to the volcano?
Not well, we have to talk about someone who shows up and sees Ricky Morton.
Oh, yes, yes.
Ricky Morton, is that you? He uses his full name.
And this esteemed individual is?
Well, it's Animal from the Legion of Doom. And again, as they cut away from there, like you hear poor Ricky Morton saying, all right, guys, the rib's over.
Yes. Ricky Morton, unsung MVP of this whole production.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, you know what would have been cool if they were talking about tag teams that could have shown up? We got Animal. Why not have Heidenreich show up with him?
Why not?
The real Road Warriors.
Yes.
I'm thinking I brought Hawk out of the Lake of Reincarnation.
Oh.
Oh.
That would have been the best. They could have brought a lot of guys out of that lake.
Wow. let's see. Where do we go from that tangent?
Well, Vanguard 1 is fighting Abyss.
Yes. Because Vanguard 11
whatever it is, we should probably get to the conclusion, I think.
Yes, we are at
this
the
is actually going longer
there.
Than Total Nonstop Solution.
Yeah.
And this is, again, why were Bobby Lashley and Eddie Edwards, why did they fight all the way from the Hardy House to the volcano to be there for the climactic scene with everybody else?
Why would you go near a volcano? If you're, like, in general, and you're not wearing shirts. Like, this whole not wearing shirts near fire, I don't understand at all.
No. So, long story short, we're down to the Hardys versus the Decay with Bobby Lashley and Eddie Edwards fighting alongside them for some reason at the edge of the volcano. And Crazy Steve
gets thrown in the volcano.
Ends up getting a twist of fate, and he falls into the volcano, which shoots him up into the air Warner Brothers style and allows him to land back in the ring where Matt Hardy pins him, and the land of deletion has been saved.
And then we get that montage of the family celebrating in front of the volcano with the fireworks.
Yeah, Senior Benjamin still in the Robert jacket.
The land of deletion was almost destroyed. The six of us will rebuild it.
Six?
Seven.
Yeah. You're pregnant? Wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, so yeah, if you haven't seen this entire two-hour program was basically just a vehicle for Matt and Rebby to announce that they have a baby on the way. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, so, boy.
Overall, Aaron, what'd you think about this thing, man? I know you had some gripes with it, but in comparison to some of the other Matt Hardy productions, Matt Hardy joints.
Yeah, and rank them quick. Yeah, so we had Final Deletion, right?
Yep.
Deleted Decay. The Great War.
Yep.
The Halloween, and then this.
Yep.
For me, Final Deletion is the best one. It was the first one. It was the weirdest one. It could be focused on just Matt and Jeff.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably put the great – what was the one where they're fighting underwater?
Oh, that was Deleted Decay.
I'd put Deleted Decay. That's just absurd. They're fighting underwater. I'd put that second. This probably third.
Yeah. I agree. I'd go Final Deletion, Deleted Decay because I really like some of the stuff they did on that one. And then this one third. Because Deleted Decay, remember, we got like, oh, you're not a selfish Brother Nero after all.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'd put this third because it was fun, but there were some flaws. And then I'd probably go, you know, Great War and the Halloween thing after that.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't know. On the whole, like, I know it's going to sound crazy, but I think they didn't go far enough with the concept. Like, I know that's absurd, but, like, I think they still played it too safe with the wrestling matches.
And to be fair, I don't know in terms of the concept and also in terms of the participants, I don't know if they were hamstrung by some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that was going on.
Sure, yeah. And I don't even know if it would work as, like, if they just went all in on the craziness. But
yeah.
Well, I mean, do you guys think this is it? Like, or do you think we get more?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
We're getting more, right?
Yeah. Like, even on – I think Instagram today on Twitter, TNA was already promoting, like, Matt Hardy had a new song, The 12 – Deletions of Christmas. So yeah, this thing's not going to be done. But I think for an entire night, they succeeded in the fact that they took a 20-minute skit and stretched it out to 2 hours. Was it a complete masterpiece? No. But for what it was, I thought they did a good job.
No, it was fun. And it's funny, but I remember when we first talked about the very first one. What the hell am – why am I forgetting
Final
it now?
Deletion.
Final Deletion. When we first talked about Final Deletion, we suggested that they should move the whole promotion there. And like
here they are.
But I don't know if it's the worst idea.
No, I don't think it is. I think this is what they should be, what TNA should be is right here. Just making movies. I mean, they're good at it. They're good. They're all good at it. So I don't know why they wouldn't just do it.
Yeah, like instead of this WWE light, like just be this weird, different. It's like we thought Lucha Underground was weird.
Right.
Like it's a whole other level
with your regular stuff. So you know you can bring up new guys as well.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't we go ahead and wrap things up, guys? We have been on for ages, it feels like. But it was a great recap. Aaron, always an awesome time to have you here. We'll have you back for more TNA Talk. This is just the beginning, not the end, sadly and happily. So hope everyone enjoyed the conversation. I want to give a big thanks to Kevin Kelly coming on and talking a lot of ROH with us here tonight. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. I won't be here, but Steve and Nate will be here. We'll have a special guest, I'm sure. We're going to do some year-end more awards, more year-in-review kind of stuff. And we'll also be recording the night of Wrestle Kingdom. So I'm sure we'll be talking that as well. We're going to try and get our buddy Pete on to cover that. So have a great Christmas or any other holiday that you may be celebrating around this time. And, of course, have a happy and healthy new year. We'll talk to you in 2017 here on Clotheslines and Headlines. Everyone take care.
All right, time for that eggnog alizé. Break open the bottle.
Still waiting to air my grievances. When is that part of the show?
After the pizza straight.
Yes.
Did you read Santa Claus my list?
Of the girls you're waiting to kiss?
Mike, that list was only a joke.
Too late, Jermaine, he's bringing your mistletoe.
Bet you just want toys and stuff.
Yeah,